The House, please come back to order. Chairman Childers.
Mr. Speaker, just a reminder for the Code of the West, item 8, talk less, say more.
That code hasn't passed yet. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move that the House resolve itself in the Committee of the Whole.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor, please say aye. Opposed, no. The House is resolved in the Committee of the Whole. Representative Connolly.
Okay, the Committee of the Whole will come to order. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File Number 2. The reading clerk will read the bill. Sorry, is Senate File 24.
Senate File 24, introduced by Senator Martin, an act relating to community-based in-home services for seniors. This bill was referred to Committee Number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, which recommended that it do pass. Ayes, Bonner, Davison, Escobel, Harvey, Kimball, Landon, Millen, Shepperson, excused, Hallinan, signed, Representative Landon, Chairman.
Chairman Landon.
Madam Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rise to report, it do so with a recommendation that Senate File 24 do pass. There are no standing committee amendments, and I would turn over the explanation of the bill to the good representative from the Short Grass Prairie in southeast Wyoming.
Representative Mellon.
Thank you, Madam Chairwoman. What we're doing in this bill is just amending the eligibility criteria. What we currently have is when you have someone that is looking to get into the community-based in-home services program, they go through a thing called an AGNES, which is the Aging Needs Evaluation Summary. There's no cost. Well, the client does it. I guess it's a cost of $50 for the client when they come in to visit about it. It has been working very well with them. And what we did was when we started in 2007 with Senate File 89, which was our Long-Term Care Act, they put in to the statute that this program, I guess, would go through what we would call a long-term 101 assessment. And that, if you can see, I set a handout that talks about the community-based in-home service programs, and then what we do for home and community-based service programs, which is your long-term care. Well, in statute, it says that for the community-based in-home service program, they would fill out, do the LT 101 assessment, but that's unnecessary to do. So basically, all this bill is on page 2, line 2, we're just going to delete as determined by consultation and assessment pursuant to the Wyoming Long-Term Care Choices Act. And in doing that, then we're going to delete that they don't have to do a long-term 101 assessment, and they can just continue using that AGNES assessment. That's basically all this bill is, and I would stand for any questions.
And if I hear the question.
Question
being called. All those in favor of Representative Landon's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Bill Number 24 do pass. Please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Senate File 24 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 24. The reading clerk will read the bill. Sorry, 32. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 32, introduced by the Labor Committee, an act referring to administration of government Wyoming investment in nursing extension. This bill was referred to Committee Number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, which recommended that it do pass. Ayes, Bonner, Davison, Escobel, Harvey, Kimball, Landon, Millen, Shepperson, excused, Hallinan. Signed, Representative Landon, Chairman.
Chairman London.
Madam Chairman, I move, that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that Senate File 32 do pass. There are no standing committee amendments, and I turn over the explanation of the bill to the good representative from the Great Basin.
Representative Harvey.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. If you look on your desks, you will find a graph that shows the number. It says 2009 graduates, number of 2009 graduates. This bill is about the Wyoming Investment in Nursing Extension called the WIN program. This program does three things. It educates nursing instructors. It allows nurses to go on and get their master's and their doctorate degree in nursing. The second thing it does is it educates RNs. If someone goes to school and becomes an RN, then we pay them back part of their education costs if they agree to serve in the state. The third thing it does is it allows RNs to become better educated. So if they get their registered nurse degree as an associate at one of the community colleges, it also gives them the opportunity to go to the University of Wyoming and get their bachelor degree in nursing, which actually provides a better workforce, a higher quality workforce. So hopefully you've had the chance to look at the chart. And if you want to know if this program is working, look at the third column. It says percent of graduates employed after graduation. Every single community college has 100% employment rate. If you look at the next one, how many of them stayed in Wyoming? 73%, 95%, 86%, 72%, and so forth. Now, the next column is also important because it correlates to the column previous to that, the percentage of accepted applicants from out of state. So they come from out of state, they get their education here, and looking at the percentages, 25% of them were from out of state at the beginning, and 73% stayed in Wyoming to work. And the next college down, 95% stayed in Wyoming. Only 5% of their applicants were from out of state. So if you go down, the correlation to how many were from out of state in the first place versus how many are continuing to be employed, the correlation is fairly similar along the path. So if we're educating out-of-state nurses, are we paying for that? Indirectly, we are, because what we're doing is we're paying for the nurse educators. So we're increasing, and when this program was in its first early stages, we could not educate a large number in addition to what we were already doing, but we ask every community college to double their capacity. Well, in order to be able to make that come to pass, then we had to educate the educators. We needed more teachers to be able to do that. And as you can tell, this is just a real simple short bill. It does one thing. It extends this program from 2011 to 2016. So what good has it done in the years that we've had it? It has taken the pressure off of hospitals. It has given us the ability to hire more nurses. It has increased the ability for our hospitals and our clinics to be able to serve more patients and at a higher quality. When there was a survey done of nurses, the question was, would higher salaries encourage you to stay in the business longer? And it actually ranked number 5 on the list. I will tell you that the reason that this program needs to go forward is that the mean average age of registered nurses in Wyoming is 51 years old. So you can tell that we have an aging nursing population, but I will also say that when this program was first developed, that average age was actually older than that. So we do have more young nurses in the programs and working. And with that, Madam Chairman, I will stand for questions.
Representative Madden.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I was just wondering if your committee did any analysis of what this is costing us in foregone, either costs or foregone revenue or something like that. Is there some numbers you could give us? There's no fiscal statement on it, and I was just wondering if you'd discuss that.
Representatives Wanitzer, Dave.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I know when we originally put this program together, it was to get more nurses into the state of Wyoming, and I can tell that the results have been absolutely excellent. My question is, have we saturated, or is there still a great vacancy of nurses in the state? Thank you.
Chairman Landon.
Madam Chairman, I can provide some answers to the good representative from Johnson County. This bill has an appropriation that is already in the budget bill of approximately $2.5 million. Of that $2.5 million, about $200,000 is going to the University of Wyoming. Most of the other monies are going to six of the seven community colleges for instructors and instructor support, because one of the features of nursing programs is, in order to do their practical aspects in the hospitals and clinics, there has to be one instructor for eight students. There is a small amount that goes to, or an amount, and I don't have the exact number, but it's a small amount of the as a percentage of the total appropriation that goes to scholarships for students, primarily working students or underemployed students, or is my understanding. About 70% of that is going for nurses who are working on associate's degree, about 20%, 20 to 30% for University of Wyoming for four-year degree nurses. Just to address the saturation point a little bit, in the next 10 years, it's predicted that the because of the aging population and the trends that they see, that the that we're going to need twice as many nurses in the state of Wyoming than what we currently have, and there looks like there continues to be a need. We actually heard this bill twice in interim committee, because our first question was, do we really need this, especially in this economic job climate, or were people wanting to come into nursing, and did we have enough people coming into nursing as it was? It is not so much the number of people coming into nurses as it is an issue of having the trained and qualified and educated master's and doctorate level nurses in the community colleges and the University of Wyoming to train the nurses, and that's where the majority of this money is spent, and a number of the scholarships are also in that area of nurses leaving positions that they have worked on, going back in, getting the education they need to become faculty members. So we're just at our first hearing, we weren't satisfied with what we heard. We went back and asked the different providers to give us more information and more statistics, and we left satisfied that the need was there and that this program was meeting this need. And in fact, we felt so comfortable with it that we thought, let's not ask them to come back for another 4 years or so, and then we'll need to take a look at it again then.
Representative Bonner.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just real quickly, this is a great program. I'm on for the bill. You can add up for yourself, but you see right there, 310 WIN nurses graduated in Wyoming in the last year. The demand isn't going away. It's tremendous. So this program has been good for the colleges, certainly good for students. But more importantly, the thing to remember, this program its commitment is the people of Wyoming, to educate nurses who will uphold the quality standards in our communities and in our hospitals and around the state. So on and for the bill. Thank you.
Anyone else? Do I hear the question? Question being called. All those in favor of Representative Landon's motion that when the Committee of Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Bill Number 32 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Senate File 32 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 41. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 41, introduced by the Education Committee, an act relating to the Wyoming Teacher Shortage Loan Repayment Program. This bill was referred to Committee Number 4, Education, which recommended that it do pass. Ayes, Connolly, Kraft, Dirks, Lubno, McKim, McComey, no. Brechtel, Yagi, Teeters, signed, representing McComey, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Chairman McComey.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Madam Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that Senate File 41 do pass. And I would like to pass the explanation over to the good lady from House District 17, where there's rocks in their springs.
Representative Kraft.
And possibly their heads. Thank you. Thank you so much, Madam Chair. I'm here to bring you the Teacher Shortage Loan Repayment Program bill that was, or Senate file that was referred to our Education Committee. This bill does one thing. It extends the sunset date for 5 years. It's currently scheduled to sunset in 2011. This would extend it to 2016. And in our committee, we heard pretty extensive testimony about this program. Now, if you're not real familiar with it, it was actually created in 2005 to do two things. One was to ease the financial burden of Wyoming students who plan to attend college and plan to teach in what are called high-need subject areas in Wyoming public schools. The other goal was to provide Wyoming schools with an employee base in some of these areas that it's difficult to find qualified instructors. Now, when this bill was first passed in 2005, it defined high-needs areas as mathematics, science, and special education. Then in the 2007 session, foreign language was added. Then last time, it was added for endorsements in both reading and English as a second language. And those are not for the initial teaching certifications, initial licensure like the original ones were, but these are for people who already are teachers, but they would like to add either English as a second language or reading as one of their endorsements. Now, in order to qualify for this loan program, you have to be a Wyoming resident, you have to be a graduate of a Wyoming high school, you have to be at least a junior in college, you have to be admitted to an academic program in one of those major areas, or in an endorsement program in those two areas, and you have to qualify for financial need. Then what you do for every year after your graduation that you continue to work in a Wyoming school, a portion of your debt is forgiven until you have paid back the debt. Now, I'd like to remind the body that this is profiled in the budget, but if you remember our budget amendments of yesterday, there was an amendment that removed $100,000. From their line item because they felt they could operate. So I think they're already looking at being very fiscally responsible with that particular action. And, of course, the question is raised that, well, we did this when we needed teachers. We probably don't need teachers anymore, what with economic conditions the way they are. Actually, we do in these particular areas. A survey was done of the administrators in the different school districts. 51% of them said they're still, even now, having trouble finding special ed teachers. 38% said they're still having trouble finding qualified math teachers. So we do still have those areas of need that are missing. We do still have our Wyoming students that we want to be able to help who will then stay in the community. This is a new, a relatively new program, starting in 2005. So, of course, then the first graduating class was 2007 and 2008. Another area that the administrators pointed out is that they're projecting retirements within the next 10 years of 45% of the teaching population. So the need continues to exist. It's a well-thought-out, well-expanded program. This just extends the sunset date for 5 years. I would stand for questions and encourage your support of this Senate file. Thank you.
Representative Teeters.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Rising on and against the bill, for several reasons. First of all, I don't believe we have a teacher shortage. We're paying our teachers well enough in the state of Wyoming that recruitment is not the issue that it once was. Second of all, even if you do believe we do have a teacher shortage, this program is not addressing it because the program is severely underutilized. We only had 14 participants last year. The nursing program bill that we just passed is an example of a good program. They've recruited over 300 nurses a year there. This program isn't working, and it's not necessary. And if we kill this bill today, the program won't even go away until 2011. So we'll have another opportunity next session to revisit this. So I would encourage you to vote no on the bill.
Representative Shepperson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I don't know what to do with these bills. I have struggled and struggled and struggled with the WIN program. We do teachers, we do vets, we do nurses. Well, we're short of geologists. We're short of architects. We're short of welders in my area. We're short of bankers. What about physical therapists? And so I guess I just don't know that this is the role of government. I voted for the nurses ones. Maybe I should be consistent, but I just am wondering how big this ball is going to get because it just keeps building and building.
Representative Mann.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. The sun never sets, does it? Before I could vote for this, I'd have to know whether or not we got a shortage in teachers. It sounds like it's expanded the number of disciplines, of majors that would qualify for this as a way to chase more people to get into it or something. And I am not aware of shortages of teachers anymore since we got such high wages for them now. And I just don't think we have enough information to go along with this. And certainly we've got another year to consider this and maybe we can get the right kind of data that we need, similar to that nursing data where we know how many people have been using it, what disciplines are using it, the kind of information that you normally need to determine whether it's wise to continue a sunset.
Representative McKim.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Just a quick note on this also, in favor of this bill, in favor of this bill. This is the EAs that's issued by the board that watches over the teachers, and this is simply the exceptions they allow teachers in particular teaching areas they have. For example, in the language area, last year they issued 33. This year they're issuing 30 of these exceptions to them. In the reading, last year it was 9, this year it's 3. So it's having some positive effect of what's going on and what we're talking about here. In science, for example, last year's 25, this year it's 38. So in other words, we have 38 teachers teaching an area which they're really not qualified, but they have to issue exceptions for them to allow them to teach in these areas. Overall, if we look at special education, last year it's 27, this year it's 29. So as I'm looking at and going through this, to me there is an area, there is a definite need still going on, and I ask for your support of this bill. Thank you.
Representative Kraft. Okay. Chairman McComey.
Well, thank you very much, Madam Chairman. I was going to say that the arguments that have been against the bill almost speak for the bill. Let's look at what disciplines we're talking about here. Special education, mathematics, foreign language, physics, chemistry, biology, all very tough areas to not only learn how to teach, but to take yourself. A lot of people shy away from those types of disciplines. This program is designed to try and get people to do this, and once they get into it, to help them with this. And the argument that we don't need it right now at a time like this, ladies and gentlemen, we've got kids that were going to school or taking some of these that all of a sudden some of their financial rug has been pulled out from under them. And this program is qualified based upon need. It's not just a handout to just anybody. It's based upon need. So, ladies and gentlemen, on and for the bill.
Representative Byrd.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Well, this just illustrates the discussion that we're having here is whether we are still content to have our two major exports, our youth and our intellect and our minerals, be exported out to state. So if you're content with that, you know, you can vote against this. But if you'd like to change that, I believe that you should vote in support of this.
Representative Shepherdson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think for the next general session, I'm going to draft a bill that says we have a lawyer shortage problem because they're all here in the Capitol for the last 2 months.
Representative Hammonds.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think there's a misunderstanding about the intention of this piece of legislation. I know many people in the state when I was on the Board of Trustees would call me because they were upset because their child was at one of our state institutions and the math and the science were being taught by someone who was not a Native American speaker. And they couldn't understand what their math instructor, who was from India or from the Middle East, was saying. And the unfortunate thing in the United States is we don't have a lot of our young people who are majoring in the hard sciences or in mathematics. And in fact, if they are majoring in them, they are not becoming teachers. What they are doing is they're going to work for industry, which pays a lot more money. And so the original intention of this bill before you was to attract more of our bright young people who happen to be interested in math or the sciences, for example, physics, to say, please, come and be a teacher. And if you will become a teacher in that subject matter, we will pay for your education. And so if you say that there aren't lots of people flocking to this program, it's because we still have that same essential problem. Our young people who are good in math and the hard sciences are attracted to private industry where they can make more money. That is an elemental problem. And so this program is trying to attract our Wyoming young people to the profession of teaching. And if it attracts some of them, I hope that we can keep them in this state where they will help another generation. So for any of you who've ever been concerned that your teachers were not from this country and that the kids could not understand what they were saying, then you should be sympathetic to the issue that we should do whatever we can to encourage our young people who are good in those subject matters to become teachers and to, in fact, teach our own next generation of children. And for that reason, I would hope you would continue to support this particular bill.
Representative Miller.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. You know, the legislature down here, this body has done a great job the last 8 years getting teacher pays up to amongst the highest in the country. When I came down here, I think we were in the bottom quarter percent, bottom 25% in teacher pay in the country. I think we're in the top 25%. And you've already heard the comments that we're attracting teachers from all over the place. I think there's multiple applications for each of these jobs. But, you know, again, I see these, you know, programs that I know this is a repayment program, but the other programs, like we give the money to get more nurses in the state. And then we wonder why their pay is low. I know lots of nurses that quit nursing after a few years because the pay remains low. You make the demand a little bit more, their pay will go up. And, I got to be careful here because you get into this gender pay issue in Wyoming. We keep subsidizing programs like this for our schools to get subsidized to kick out teachers or nurses, and we pay them less than the market generally does because we're kicking them out there to replace, especially the nurses even. So, again, I think we're paying the teachers enough now. I think they can continue to repay their student loans and on and against the bill.
Representative Patton.
Thank you, Madam Chairperson. Speaking on and for the bill, I find it ironic that we talk about it. We've increased the salaries generally across the state, and it hasn't been uniform. Some of the poorer schools are paying higher than some of the more wealthy districts on average. And what I find curious about that is those people that make the judgments on averages perhaps don't really understand the details. One of the details that we're faced with here is that we are mandating higher and higher requirements. We're asking now in AP courses, advanced placement courses, these are the kids that have an opportunity to excel. And we're saying that a five-year or a seven-year teacher that has done all of the extra work to be prepared and qualified to teach an AP course, an advanced placement course, that's not sufficient. We want them to have master's degrees. That means an additional imposition not only on their time and their willingness, but also on their cost. And so the encouragement, I think, ought to be on trying to urge and help and support the teachers that are willing and have a program like this that will support that kind of encouragement. So I am on and for the continuation of the program.
Representative Stubson.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. On and against the bill, I think here's the funny thing about this bill. We can talk about health care providers and all these other professions and how we incentivize them, but here we have a profession where we in this body control the amount of money flowing into the system. We in this body control the indirectly control how much is going to be paid. I mean, that's how we control the demand for teachers, not by doing little programs like this. I think we have done a good job over the years of incentivizing, making sure we have good pay for good quality teachers, and that's where our leverage is, and that's why I think you should defeat this bill.
Representative Teeters.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Just to kind of recap the debate, I think ultimately this teacher shortage loan repayment program at one point in time had a place in our state, and that was when we were having trouble recruiting teachers. Whether or not we still have difficulty recruiting is a matter of anecdotal debate at this point. Some say we do, some say we don't. I know in my district we have 3 to 4 times as many applicants as we used to have. I'm assuming that that's similar around the state. Because of that, we have a severely underutilized program that has outlived its usefulness. And so I would encourage you to vote no on the bill.
Representative Kraft.
Thank you so much, Madam Chair. We're hearing a lot of discussion about, do we have a teacher shortage? Yes, we do. No, we don't. Well, maybe. Well, look at how much money we're paying them. Well, look at the recessed economy. Of course, we don't have a teacher shortage. I do have some data about the teacher shortage, because remember, this is not teacher shortage across the board. This is teacher shortage in areas that it's hard to find qualified people. One of my good colleagues on the Education Committee gave you some information about exception certificates. Those are certificates that are offered so that you can teach in an area you're not really qualified for, that you don't have a degree in. And we are noticing that the number of exception certificates that have been requested have been going down since the inception of this program. Now, let me tell you about a research study that was done about this program where they asked the people who know, the people who are in the school districts, the people who are administering these programs, do you still have a shortage? And I thought, just on my own, I check it out myself just with my own school district because I didn't have time to check with everybody. So let me tell you, special education, that's the top area identified. 51% of the administrators surveyed said we still have trouble finding special education teachers. I checked with my district. They said currently we have 8 in this one district. 8 special education positions that are either not filled, are being filled by a teacher working on an exemption request, or are being filled with a teacher of record and a paraprofessional is teaching the class because they can't find the teachers. Mathematics, 38% of the administrators said, we can't find people to teach math, especially the higher level math. My district has 3 unfilled math positions right now. People that could be working in the system, and they're not. So the class sizes are huge because they can't find people that have those certifications. Foreign language, 29%. What's my district done? They have totally eliminated the study of German and the study of some additional upper-level foreign language classes. You can't take 4 years of a foreign language anymore because they haven't got the teachers. Physics, 19%. Chemistry, 19%. English language learning, that's 12.5% across the state. But I will tell you, in a community like mine, we have 4 unfilled ELL positions. That's a huge segment of our population that's rising. So we've got the data. We've got the data from the administrators that say, yep, we still need this program. You can't just look out and say, is there a teacher shortage? You've got to look at the specialties. I was also not real sure where we got the numbers of the people that are participating in the program. Since it began in 2005, there have been 99 students. Currently, there are 18 students who are already graduated. They're working in Wyoming, and they paid their debt in full by working in Wyoming. There are 24 teachers working throughout the state to repay their loan. There are currently 14 who have graduated and are obtaining certification. There are 15 who dropped the program, which means you got to repay the loan in full, and that's what they're doing. And there are 26 students who are still enrolled at the University of Wyoming. I would also like to remind you that this is not just, I'm going to go be a special education teacher, pay for it. This is a financial need program because that's, if you remember back, that's one of the criteria that you have to have. You have to be a Wyoming resident, you have to agree to work in a Wyoming school, and you have to demonstrate financial need. If the financial need component is not there, you do not qualify for this program. So I would urge your support of this Senate file and of this program as it continues along, because I can tell you, coming from the trenches, the need is there and the need is great. Thank you.
Chairman McComey.
Real quickly, I'm sure most of members of this body have made up their mind, but the good lady hit upon one thing that's been overlooked. We've heard about all the teachers, that we can hire all these teachers. And Montana's saying, hey, you're stealing all our teachers. South Dakota says, you're stealing all our teachers. This is for Wyoming graduates. Wyoming kids can take these courses and stay in Wyoming. They're for our children to be able to stay in Wyoming. Thank you.
Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman McComey's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Bill number 41 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no.
No.
Senate File 41 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File number 2. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File number 2, introduced by the Management Council. An act relating to appropriations for the legislature. This bill was referred to committee number 2, appropriations, which recommended that it do pass. Ayes, Berger, Hammonds, Harshman, Jorgensen, Pedersen, Stewart, excused, Phelps, sign representing Berger, chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Mr. Speaker?
Madam Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that House Senate File Number 2 do pass. Madam Chairman, Senate File 2 is the appropriation for the legislature, and that's pretty clearly this is what keeps this legislature running. This is the closest thing probably to zero-based budgeting that we have in the legislature, which is this budget that is remade every year or every 2 years by our staff and evaluated closely by the Management Council, and the Management Council reviews the bill, and then it goes through the normal process. It contains the appropriations for the general operation of the legislative branch of government. Section 1 of the bill provides appropriations for salaries for legislators and staff, travel and per diem for the session and for interim committee work, annual dues to national organization the legislature belongs to, and general administrative support, which includes such things as supplies, printing, photocopying, technology, software and equipment, purchase of laptops, and so on. And you'll see that on Section 1 of the bill. The annual dues, we can use half of those each year on page 2, lines 12 through 15. Page 3, it's got the appropriation for a purchase of 90 new laptops, and it allows us to use the proceeds from the sale of the used laptops to buy new ones. There's a technology enhancement project that's recommended by the Select Committee on Legislative Technology on the bottom of page 3. Section 2 of the bill on page 4 provides Management Council flex authority to move funds between budget categories as necessary. Section 3 authorizes out-of-state travel in accordance with Management Council policy. Section 4 carries forward the balance remaining for several unfinished projects, such as committee room and office furnishings. And the balance from the sale of used laptops is also carried forward to help pay for the purchase of new laptop computers, which are now being replaced once every 3 years. Section 5 on page 5, page 6, provides a small appropriation that will allow us to continue to purchase the PDAs, the personal digital assistants, the smartphone devices, technology changes quickly, and members may want to buy new models. You can half of the purchase price of that can be reimbursed to you. Section 7 provides appropriations for furnishings recommended by the Select Committee on Legislative Facilities, and it was that covered it. Section 8 allows LSO to pay salary to newly elected legislators to attend the new legislator school and to attend committee meetings during the time between their election and the general session. Section 9 provides an appropriation for legislative redistricting, which we will need to complete during this upcoming biennium. Section 10 sets out the effective date, and the bill passed with no amendments in the other body. And you can take a look at the fiscal note and see what the total appropriation is. And that's the explanation of the bill, Madam Chairman. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Are there any questions? If not, okay. Question having been called, all those in favor of... Sorry, Representative Patton. Representative Patton.
I didn't have the one from Park County in front of me that I couldn't be seen this time, so I thought I'd get your attention. Thank you, Madam Chairman. I do have a question on services here in the legislature. We have discussed since 1971, anyway, the prospect of having an electronic voting in the House chamber. And obviously, we can only talk about the House chamber. If the Senate doesn't want to do it, that's their affair. But if we want it, it's our affair. We spent 5 days of this budget session on introduction of bills because of a roll call vote necessitated by the two-thirds introduction rule. The two-thirds introduction rule, whether we like that or whether we don't like it, well, that's what we've imposed on ourselves, and appropriately. by the minds of many. But to waste 5 days in doing that, when it probably could have been done in at the most a day and a half with an electronic system, just seems to make sense to me. And today, we have several thousands of dollars in conduits that your desks are all sitting on that have never been used since 1972. Today, I think we could have about as good a system as was designed then with wireless. It just seems to me that we ought to express ourselves and try to improve our productivity and our ability to have time to discuss what is becoming more and more a general session during the budget session and help us with the voting. So I ask the question, is any serious consideration being given by the Management Council relative to this budget proposal for us to consider such an item?
Mr. Speaker.
Madam Chairman, no, not that I'm aware of. It seems to be an annual topic, or at least every couple of years, where we discuss that who is the co-chair of the Select Committee on Legislative Process. The good chairman of the Appropriations Committee might be able to address that. I don't know if it'll come up in Management Council later in the week, but some of the issues that always relate to that is the reluctance of the other body to want to move to that, but that doesn't mean the House couldn't try it ourselves, because every roll call is about 3 minutes, I think, and sometimes it gives you enough time to actually read the bill before you vote on it. So maybe there is something to it, I would yield.
Chairman Berger.
Thank you very much, Madam Chairman. And we have had this discussion over the last couple of years and have a terrific report that we could certainly provide for you that was done by one of our organizations and did an analysis of our system. And honestly, I've been working on the budget, so I can't remember the time frame of the efficiency that it would provide. Certainly, we've never been opposed to it, but what we found out is that Wyoming has a pretty good system based on what we're doing currently with our website, with getting the votes on the website and being available to our constituency. And I want to say that it was 6 minutes difference, something like that. It was very insignificant in the time that it took, and actually the vote got done quicker based on how we're doing it in the Wyoming House than it did based on a totally automated system. So it's not that we're, believe me, our committee is not opposed to advanced technology, but we think that there are better ways of utilizing our funds and our time. At this time, that doesn't mean it won't change.
Representative Brown.
Well, Madam Chairman, two quick thoughts about that. Number one, we already have electronic voting. It's being done right here. It's all electronically recorded. Number two, if you want to do electronic voting from your desk, it's going to be slower, I guarantee you. You look at sometimes when Congress does electronic voting, they'll leave it open for 2 hours and lends itself to all kinds of mischief. Here we have a vote. When it's done, it's done. And I think that there's no need to consider any changes.
Representative Berger.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. That was the other point I wanted to make, that Wyoming is held in high regard for our process of voting, because we close it immediately, so it does not allow for there to be a lot of shenanigans going on that we've been aware of around the nation. So that we were really proud of that report, and I would be glad to get it to anyone if you'd like some more reading.
Representative Patton.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Great defense. I would just suggest to the one comment comparing us to Congress, and I want you to understand that I firmly believe that there's little solace in comparing yourself to failure.
If I see no more discussion, Representative Roscoe.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a quick comment on Senate File 2. I think it would be handy in the future to see a comparison between this year and last year so we can see if we're creeping up or down. Thank you.
Not seeing any more discussion, do I hear the question? Question being called. All those in favor of Speaker Simpson's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Senate File Number 2 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Senate File 2 has passed the Committee of the Whole. Privilege of the floor, Ms. Representative Roscoe.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Every once in a great while, someone does come down to visit me from all the way across the state, and I would like to introduce two friends who hit me on the head and got me into this job. Joe Albright and Marcia Kunstel, who live deep in the mountains of the Grovons, right across from the Tetons for quite a good portion of the year. Please welcome them.
Welcome to the House.
If I remember correctly, Marcia was a reporter in Beirut when the bombs were flying and things like that. Thank you.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ladies and gentlemen, please move in this order. Senate File 53, 54, and 15, those are near the bottom of the list. Place those in that order after Senate File 71. 53, 54, and 15 after 71.
Representative Lubnow.
No.
The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 36. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 36, introduced by Senator Hines, an act relating to water development, the Gillette Madison Water Project. This bill was referred to Committee Number 5, Agriculture, State, and Public Lands and Water Resources, which recommended that it do pass. Ayes, Blake, Carson, Gilmore, Muniz, Semlek, Teeters, Wallace, Swanitzer, Dan. No, Edmonds. Signed, Representative Semlek, Chairman. The bill was further referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriations, which recommended it do pass. Ayes, Berger, Hammonds, Harshman, Jorgensen, Pedersen, Stewart. Excused, Philp. Signed, Representative Berger, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Semlek?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with a recommendation that Senate File Number 36 do pass. And I will ask the good representative from House District 31 to explain the bill.
Representative Lubnow.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I bring you Senate File 36, the Gillette Madison Water Project. Let me begin by thanking you for last year's grant and appropriation for the amount of $16.75 million to begin the design, permitting, easement acquisition, and other non-construction tasks. The community has been moving forward with the project and wants me to extend a thank you to this body for the appropriation. I read in our local paper the other day that Gillette's population during the 2000 census was 19,646. The population in Gillette today is 33,159, or a 13,153 person increase. If I were to pick a location where most of the folks have come from, it would be that state that looks like a glove, moving to my community seeking opportunity. What they don't have in that state that looks like, or what they do have in that state that looks like a glove is not so many jobs, but they do have lots of water, including five Great Lakes. What we don't have where they move to is water. We don't have a river, we don't have a stream that runs all year, and our Fort Union formation under the community is impaired. For our community to thrive and grow and be one of the economic engines of the state, we need water. Senate File 36 is phase two of that project. The project is to include two elements: the drilling of five wells and the pumps and piping in the existing Madison well field. As you know, Gillette obtains 80% of its water currently from well fields 50 miles to the northeast of Gillette. That project has been in existence for nearly 30 years and was put in place when our ex-shoe salesman U.S. Senator was mayor of my city. The other portion of that project is the Southwest Treated Water Transmission Pipeline. The project has changed over the last year from a municipal project to a regional water project. All of the improvement and service districts, Campbell County, and the City of Gillette have signed a memorandum of understanding setting forth the operating characteristics and charges to utilize the project water. The financing elements of the bill consists of a loan to the City of Gillette in the amount of $8 million and a grant from the Water 3 account in the amount of $16 million, or a 33-67 split, which is similar to other projects that the state has financed for other communities over the year. The funds from the project come out of the Water 3 account. According to the Wyoming Water Development Commission, $82 million has been transferred from Water 1 and the budget reserve account to Water 3. The grant portion of the project will be transferred out of Water 3 with the intent to pay it back. We have borrowed from this account in the past, and we have always paid all the funding back. I've submitted two pieces of correspondence for your review, one from the Wyoming Water Development Commission and one from an association that deals with water that supports the project. And I don't know if they made that out or not, but they were listed. The plan is to submit to the voters a capital facilities tax, 6-cent tax, to pay for the region's portion of the project. However, we have a chicken and egg problem. We need to design the project and get a final number before we can submit that to the voters. Then we will propose a capital facilities tax. If that fails, plan B is to bond the project. The Wyoming Water Development Commission will be secured under the project, and if any excess water sales occur, Wyoming Water Development Commission will receive all of the proceeds from the water sales till the debt is paid off, and then 2/3 of any proceeds after that. So nothing unusual. The only reason that this is not part of the omnibus water bill is because of the scale. We've done this for other similarly sized communities in the past, and I'd urge your positive consideration.
Thank you. We are, Chairman Anderson, we're on Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I move Committee of the Whole Amendment 1 to Senate File 36. I didn't agree with the presenter of the bill more that all those are facts. This is the first time there's been a raid on Water Account 3 that I can remember. However, that account is fairly new in the process. But I would like to explain the severance tax distribution before we go. You've got a little cheat sheet that looks like this, and it talks about severance tax distributions, severance tax income. Many of you are not familiar with that. Last year, there was $888 million, and these are round figures now, that was paid in because of severance tax from the minerals that we collect. The first 2% goes to the Mineral Trust Fund. That's automatic. The next $155 million is distributed in the manner that's shown on the piece of white paper that you have in your hands. Of that, this is the only place we get water development funds. We were talking about the federal mineral royalties yesterday, and there's no water funds from federal mineral royalties. But that severance tax, 62.26% goes to the general fund of the $155 million. Anything over $155 million is distributed all to the general fund and the budget reserve account. So I'm just talking about the $155 million now that goes for distribution. Of that, Water 1 gets 12.5%, Water 2 gets 2.10%, and Water 3 gets 0.5%. That's year in and year out. Then highways get 4.3%. Counties 3.8, county roads 2.9, cities and towns 9.25, and capital construction 255. That all totals up on my sheet to $155.42 million because of rounding figures, the 42.42 is in error. My proposal in this amendment, because what it says on, if you go to your bill now, page 4, Line 20, it says that it is the intent of the legislature that Water Development 3 be reimbursed for the amount of this appropriation in the future. I say let's get started on it now. So what the amendment does is take another 0.5% out of that 62.26 general fund account and the $155 million and puts it into Water 3, which makes $780,000 a year. Take 21 years to pay the water account 3 back for the 16 some million that's appropriated in this bill. That way it'll be started. We'll start getting that money paid back. It won't have to be the intent of the legislature. it will be the legislature that's repaying Water 3 in that account. And that's, in essence, what the amendment does. If there are any questions, I'd be glad to answer them.
Representative Lubnow.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. We think that that is a friendly amendment. It does exactly what we intended it to do, and I'd urge you to support the amendment.
Representative Stewart.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Let me express my confusion of this and also try and explain the importance of what we're doing by this policy decision. We're now making a decision to fund this project now at a general fund, is my understanding of this, and then probably almost not subverting, but kind of standing on end, our policy of funding our water projects from dedicated revenue streams to our water account 1, 2, and 3. And I would almost go as far as to say if this would get approved, it could almost jeopardize the bill itself by trying to incorporate policy decisions by the need of one project, and would probably be similar to some of the discussions we had regarding the some fundings of some schools. Now, another case that I would make, Madam Chair, is also that, of course, even for myself, when I look at doing capital expenditures with my own business, trying to justify borrowing money or capturing revenues in the future, you know, basically obligating future budgets for the next several years, that with, of course, not knowing what those future revenues will be like for our state, when, in fact, we clearly have the money today to pay for this, I would say that really doesn't make much sense at all. And, of course, we have a lot of these similar discussions and appropriations as far as if you can afford it in the year that the project comes up, sure, go ahead and pay for it. And with that, my friends, you know, look at the on the first page, or page 2, we're just getting into this project, a project close to $220 million, of which the state will be paying 67%. This is just the start of a huge project that we don't really know or understand how this will all come out. And I would say that now is not the time to obligate future budgets and future sessions. Thank you.
Chairman Anderson.
Thank you. In answer to that, these are dedicated funds. This is $155 million it comes from a non-renewable resource that is supposed to be invested in renewable resources. This is exactly what it do. And if it needs to be changed in the future, that's fine. But this is to get a start on the very thing the bill says. The intent of the legislature is to pay this money back to Water 3. And this is I think, an inventive way that those in the Select Water of us in Select Water have thought up. And I'd encourage you, and I vote on the amendment.
Okay, we are on Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1. All those in favor of Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1, please say aye.
Aye.
No?
No.
The amendment is adopted. We're back on the bill. Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Semlich's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Bill Number 36 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Senate File 36 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 37. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 37, introduced by the Select Water Committee, an act relating to water development, omnibus water bill construction. This bill was referred to Committee Number 5, Agriculture, State, and Public Lands and Water Resources, which recommended that it do pass. Ayes, Blake, Carson, Edmonds, Gilmore, Moniz, Semlek, Teeters, Wallace, Wanitzer, Dan. The bill was further referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriations, which recommended it do pass. Ayes, Berger, Hammonds, Harshman, Jorgensen, Peterson, Stewart, Pedersen, Stewart, signed, excused, Philp, signed, representing Berger, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Chairman Semlek.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I move that when the committee of the whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that Senate File Number 37 do pass. And I would ask co-chair of the Select Water Committee to explain the bill.
Co-chair Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. If you find your cheat sheet, it'll help you a lot on what the bill does. It's about 27 pages long, and we'll try to read every page in case you haven't. However, the one page we probably will look at pretty hard is the cheat sheet on that. If indeed you have any questions on any of the projects, the whole details are in the blue book that you should have in your possession, the contracts and the amount on each contract. On those things, and they've been heavily scrutinized by the Water Development Commission and then the Select Water as they did. The first section of that cheat sheet is on new projects for construction. This is what we're talking about, new projects for construction. And like you say, you see there on the top, the Arapahoe Water Supply, and it's in Fremont County, and it comes out of Water Development 1, and it is to connect a level 2 well. And skip on down then if you want to, or if you have any questions on any of those all come out of Water Account 1. Then the new projects on rehabilitation, that's there is a criteria that a project has to be sold before they are eligible for rehabilitation after they're, I forget right now, 15 or 20 years old and need some work, then they can apply for rehabilitation, and that comes out of Water Account 2. And most of those end up right now being irrigation projects. Some of those are 100 years old and are in dire need of some repair. I might also say that most of those projects are engineering or products only. By the pipe, and the irrigation district installs them. So normal loan grant ratio, again, is 30-60 on these projects, but on those rehabilitation projects, the big of them are 100% for the supplies they buy and nothing for the installation on that. And it usually figures out pretty close to those types of things, but those irrigation districts have their own equipment and their own manpower and keep them busy in the winter time on that. And then the bottom third or bottom portion of that cheat sheet shows those are existing projects that have been in on the way, and because we're short of money, we don't appropriate the money for the whole project, but rather just for what they can get accomplished in the year till the next legislature meets, and then we can appropriate more money as you see from the severance account. We have more money come in every year, somewhere around $25 million, and then plus the interest that's accrued on some of the other monies. And so that's there, if you look on the top, a minus $8 million. That's a deappropriation from the Deer Creek project that goes in to help the Pathfinder modification project that has been transferred there. Down about three, it shows a minus 200,000 and a plus 200,000. That's just a transfer because of a demand, more demand for new projects than there was old ones or the other way around. And so there's that much money transferred to take care of that, and it could be redone again. a total and a construction bill of $22,200,000 from water account one and $7,600,000 from water account two, and I'll stand for questions.
Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Semlick's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Bill number 37 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Senate File 37 has passed Committee of the Whole. Representative Millen.
May I have privilege of the floor, Madam Chairman?
Yes, you may.
I have some people I'd like to introduce. I hope that they're still there. They were just a minute ago. Yes. The state chair of the Wyoming Democratic Party, Leslie Peterson, she left, but her husband, Hank Phibbs, who is a county commissioner in Teton County, is here, and I think he has Andy Schwartz with him, too. Please welcome them to the House.
The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 62. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 62, introduced by Senator Bebout, an act relating to veterans' burial. This bill was referred to Committee Number 8, Transportation, Highways, and Military Affairs, which recommended it do pass. Ayes, Blake, Carson, Cohey, Gilmore, Madden, McKim, Peterson, Zwanitzer, Dave, excused, Hallen, and sign, Representative Cohey, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Cohey?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with a recommendation that Senate File 62 do pass. For a full and complete explanation of the bill, I defer to the representative from House District 7.
Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I rise in support of Senate File 62, a burial of indigents. This is a critical piece of legislation for veterans that serve in the state of Wyoming. At the present time, the VA people have told us there are about 54,000 veterans in the state. Fortunately, not everyone applies under this particular piece of legislation, but it's something we need to do and completely address. Directing your attention to the first page of this bill, you'll see that there is only the start of the change is on the bottom line. That's 15. What we've had in statute so far is preparation of the deceased veteran as an indigent, transportation to a veteran cemetery. And then what we're doing, looking on page 2, is we're expanding the scope of the wars that individuals qualify for under this bill. And that's driven by the fact that under the current statutes that we have, if you look at that section 101, Title 38, it reaches back to the Spanish-American War, brings it up to the Vietnam conflict. We're now engaged in two theaters of operation, one being Iraq and the other in Afghanistan. So that's what we're expanding that to. And, of course, hopefully we won't engage in any other conflict, but that's a necessary element that we have here. We don't put a limitation on this particular bill. As you can see, the fund appropriation in there is $500 per indigent, and that is not changing at all. So there's nothing really being involved with that. One thing is should be brought to attention of the body is the fact that it's difficult to determine the number of homeless veterans that we have. There have been VA seminars that's been held in the state, and there are frequently at least 200 homeless veterans that show up to that. And as a result, these individuals can easily fall under this particular piece of legislation. The VA has numerous resources to bury individuals once they arrive at the cemeteries. And, of course, the cemetery that's mainly used here in the state of Wyoming is the Oregon Trail State Veterans Cemetery in Evansville. And that, of course, is where a lot of the internments take place. How many cases will there be each year? It varies from time to time. Talking with the VA, of course, they have indicated there can be up to anywhere to a dozen or more a year that takes place under this. None of the county commissioners that I have heard have ever expressed any problem with it, with this, because it's people that served the country, and this pertains to those who receive the discharge of greater standing and less than honorable condition. So with that, I stand for any questions and certainly urge the body to pass this piece of legislation for people that serve Wyoming and the United States of America.
Mr. Minority Caucus Leader. Oh.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I rise in support of House Bill, our Senate File 62. I'm a co-sponsor on this particular bill. This bill originated in the county that I am from. It was brought to us by our county coroner, in that we had veterans from all wars and conflicts that our servicemen and women have participated in, and that we wanted to ensure that we had provided them the respect and honor that they deserved by providing a final burial for those that could not afford it, their families could not afford it, and then they were properly transported home. On and for House Bill 60, Senate File 62.
Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Cohey's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Bill number 62 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Senate File 62 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 71. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 71, introduced by Senator Hastert, an act relating to the disposition of military remain personnel. This bill was referred to Committee Number 8, Transportation, Highways, and Military Affairs, which recommended it do pass. Ayes, Blake, Carson, Cohey, Gilmore, Madden, McKim, Peterson, Swanitzer, Dave, signed and excused, Helen Ann, signed Representative Cohey, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Cohey?
Thank you, Madam Chairwoman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Senate File 72 do pass. For an explanation of the bill, I defer to the Representative from House District 60.
Representative Thompson.
Thank you. To begin this, I'd like to remind us that at this point in time, I am operating under number 8 of the Code of the West, and I'd hope that you would listen quickly as I go through this rather rapidly. The point that I want to make out here is that I think most of us have seen the movie Last Chance with award winner Kevin Bacon. And along that line, then, I'd like to mention to you that not having worn a military uniform of our country, as has my two sons, I am thankful to be part of this and a bit emotional. The bill, as you can see, is very specific, very quickly done. And for some of us, when we read this, it didn't seem like, I mean, what are we doing here? This has already been taken care of. This bill will take care of the situation that we've talked about. The state law of disposition of remains does not currently provide for the accommodation of the expressed written wishes of our heroes through the execution of the federally record of emergency data from our Department of Defense. When people who are in active duty, activated guard and reserve members, complete, now listen to this one, the federally mandated Department of Defense form, and they sign and they illustrate how they want if something occurs and the remains are to be done in a certain way. This is what they designate on a federal bill dealing with that Department of Defense. Unfortunately, what happens, though, some state laws do not currently recognize the federal form as an acceptable one, and there have been several cases, as brought out in committee hearings, several cases where civil actions between family members over the ultimate disposition of a federal service hero remains. That's so sad. And that is what this bill does. To eliminate that potential conflict with the federal law, And to add clarity where statute may comport with federal law, statutes are being considered by several states to fix this, of which I had no idea there was a problem like that. Family members arguing who had the number one choice of how things were to be done here with the remains of one of our heroes. So this is the accepted written instrument of service members, and they were being ignored. So what this bill does, in summation then, is to, since our state statute has no provisions for ensuring and following, if the federal, this statute, this particular bill, is here to remedy that situation and make things work together as this service person required. And I stand for questions at this. And do I strongly order?
Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Cohey's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Bill number 62 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Sorry. I need to back up. That was Senate File 71. All those in favor of Senate File 71 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Senate File 71 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 62. The reading clerk will read the bill. 53.
Senate File 53, introduced by the Management Council. An act relating to the general revision of laws, obsolete laws, general revisions. This bill was referred to Committee Number 1, Judiciary, which recommended that it do pass. Ayes, Begbie, Barbudo, Blickery, Kennedy, Gingrey, Patton, Peasley, Korberg, Throne, signed, Representative Gingrey, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Gingrey?
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that Senate File 53 do pass. There are no amendments, and I would turn over the explanation to the good gentleman from House District 53.
Representative Blickery.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I have the pleasure of explaining the most scintillating bill that will be in front of you during this entire session. Senate File 53 is a general revision of selected portions of the statutes that are obsolete or archaic. And for an example, please turn to page 2 of your bill and look on the bottom, where it says, the municipal judge shall punish for contempt in the same manner as justice of the peace, and it changes it to district court. Things like this are throughout this bill, and I hope that we will just vote on it.
Are you sure? Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Gingrey's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Bill number 53 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Senate File 53 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 54. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 54, introduced by the Management Council, an act relating to the Senate confirmation of gubernatorial appointments. This bill was referred to Committee Number 1, Judiciary, which recommended it do pass. Ayes, Begbie, Barbudo, Blickery, Kennedy, Gingrey, Patton, Peasley, Korberg, Throne. Signed, Representative Gingrey, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Gingrey?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. That when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that Senate File 54 do pass. There are no amendments, and I would turn over the recommendation to the good Majority Whip.
Thank you. Ms. Majority Whip.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. And I have the honor of visiting with you about the second most exciting Senate file that we're going to be looking at today. This bill is very simple in nature. Currently in statute, statute 2812101, it specifically allows the governor, like noon on the 13th legislative working day, noon on the 12th legislative working day. He has to have his appointments to the Senate, his recommended appointments. Then if you will look in the section that says where the Senate considers the appointments, that's section 2812-102. We simply had said that the Senate had to respond within 5 days. And interestingly enough, over the course of the years, that 5 days has ended on a weekend. So that called to the attention of the Management Council that we needed to insert the words legislative working days. So that gives the Senate 5 legislative working days to respond to the governor's appointments. And that's the bill, and I ask for the question.
Question being called. All those? Oh. Chairman Lockhart.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I think I've got an issue with this because a lot of us work on Saturdays, and it doesn't seem unreasonable for me to have the Senate work on Saturdays. So speaking in opposition to this bill, Senate file.
Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Gingrey's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that Bill number 54 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
Senate File 54 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 18. The reading clerk will read the bill. Sorry, folks, that's Senate File 15.
Senate File 15, introduced by the Mental Health Group, an act relating to involuntary commitments and emergency detentions. This bill was referred to Committee Number 1, Judiciary, which recommended it do pass. Ayes, Begbie, Barbudo, Blickery, Kennedy, Gingrey, Peasley, Warburg, Throne, excused, Patton, sign representing Gingrey, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Gingrey?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Senate File 15 do pass, and I further move the adoption of the Standing Committee Amendment. Madam Chair, what this bill does, and even though the judiciary bills were just cranking along real fast just now, we have to stop for a second, and I have to explain this one in a little bit more detail. Just so you understand what Title 25 is, just to give a little primer on that real quick, Title 25 is involuntary commitments, involuntary hospitalization to the state hospital. Essentially what happens is an individual is picked up, perhaps they're brought to the local hospital. For the first 72 hours, they're held. Before that 72 hours is up, a emergency detention hearing has to be held. That emergency detention hearing allows you to hold the person for 10 more days. Prior to the end of that 10 days, a hearing has to be held for involuntary commitment to the state hospital. So you have two different hearings involved. You have the emergency hearing, and you have the bigger hearing, which is the commitment to the state hospital. The counties are responsible for the first 72 hours, and after 72 hours, then the state is responsible funding-wise. And that's a change we made a few years ago. Title 25 still causes some issues. So the Department of Health had an employee that they sent to every single county this year. That employee met with all the stakeholders in each county, discussing with them what the issues were with Title 25. That employee then did a large report, then invited everyone who had contributed to the report to come to Casper for a big meeting where everyone commented and critiqued the report. Then that report was submitted to the Select Committee on Mental Health and Substance Abuse. That committee then spent multiple meetings reviewing this bill and came forward with this bill. Essentially, this is some things that are tying up some loose ends that are of issue. Let me deal with the Standing Committee Amendment first. This on the other body, they took out the definition of mental illness because of some other issues, but they took out too much of it, so we brought this back on this side. And essentially, if you look at the Standing Committee Amendment, this was a part that was really helping counties. What it says is mental illness means a physical, emotional, mental, or behavioral disorder which causes a person to be dangerous to himself or others and which requires treatment. What we're adding is And what we're adding is actually understood by everybody, but there's a few counties that were a little confused with this, and they've been taking the expense of these folks, and they shouldn't be. So we added in, but do not include addiction to drugs or alcohol, drug or alcohol intoxication, or developmental disabilities. So that clears that up. The other part of the Standing Committee Amendment is that psychiatrists, it was just a cleanup. We had licensed physician. We didn't have licensed psychiatrist, so we were just putting the word licensed in. And then the counties were a little concerned with this bill over the cost issue, and so we cleaned that up with this amendment at the bottom of the Standing Committee Amendment, where we just said you're only responsible for the cost incurred as to 125B. 125B is the cost of transporting the individual from your local hospital, not from the state hospital. So that's the Standing Committee Amendment, and if, unless anybody has any questions on that, I'd call for the question on the Standing Committee Amendment.
You've heard the motion on the Standing Committee Amendment. Are you ready for the question? Question having been called, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The Standing Committee Amendment number 1 has been adopted. We're back on the bill.
Now I'll explain the bill real quickly. On the second page, you'll see a new definition for treatment. Some of these folks that contributed to the report came forward and thought the present definition was too limited, and actually by expanding the definition, we would allow for better care of patients. That's what that part did. We added in on page 3, licensed psychologist. Right now, only a physician or a psychiatrist can do the final review. This would allow psychologists. The reason for that is in many communities, a psychiatrist is not available. Then over on page 4, we actually deleted subsection 4 on page 4. That was the part the counties were concerned about. And then on page 5, and the key part on page 5 and G, it's a single point of entry, but the key is on line 9, it says the Board of County Commissioners may. So it's up to the county commissioners. It's not a requirement. They can do it if they want. They don't have to do it. And then lastly, on the very last page, was this issue of transportation, which we resolved. And this had to do with somebody gets to the hospital, and then they have no way of getting home, and so then they're transported home. I would stand for any questions on the bill.
Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Gingrey's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Bill number 15 do pass, please say aye. Those opposed, no. Senate File 15 has passed the committee of the whole. The next bill for
Chair. Madam Chair, request for privilege of the floor.
Go ahead, Minority Leader.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, just a short break here. I'd like to introduce some constituents from House District 33. Right behind you there, from Arapaho, the marketing director for the Wind River Casino, Jackie Dorothy, Lisa Yawaki, Aaron and Waylon Birdchief from House District 33.
Welcome. Okay, the next bill for our consideration is Senate File 23. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 23, introduced by the Labor Committee, and act relating to unemployment compensation. This bill was referred to Committee Number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, which recommended it do pass. Ayes, Bonner, Davison, Escobel, Harvey, Kimball, Landon, Millen, Shepperson. Excused, Helen Ansign, Representative Landon, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Chairman Landon.
Madam Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with a recommendation that Senate File 23 do pass. And I'll pass over the explanation of the bill to the good representative who lives close to where I-25 has huge elk fence on either side of the road to protect the highway.
Who could that be? Representative Shepperson.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I don't know, we might have a contest going as to see who has the most exciting bill, because this is right at the top of the list, too. This is one we worked on during the interim with the Department of Employment, and basically it is bringing our state FUTA laws into compliance with the Federal Unemployment Tax Act. There are four main things that we had to change to do this. Number one, it requires as a condition for employers in our state to receive a credit against the federal tax, and that the state law must require unemployment compensation to be payable based on certain services and provision. And so noncompliance with this act would affect the tax liability for Wyoming employers, and it would cost our Wyoming employers a ton of money. The result of that would be our FUTA taxable wages would rise from a net of 0.8% to the full amount of 6.2%. So we got to get this done. And our department, our state department, in concert with the U.S. Department of Labor, has revised these. We've looked over this bill. They visit with, like I said, the U.S. Department of Labor, and it is the opinion of both parties that this bill does meet the federal law. So I'll walk you through just a couple of the main things, and then I won't bore you with the details. But basically, on page 2, lines 15 through 18, we had to define casual labor. Basically, FUTA excludes payments for services not within the normal course of business when the amount paid for such a service is $50 or less. And then if you go back, I'm still working on the main four points that we repeal or that we had to deal with. If you go back to page 8, line 10, there are some repealers. And basically we had to repeal that wages paid to a disabled worker during the year in which he became entitled to disability insurance benefits under the Social Security Act, because this exclusion does not exist in FUTA. We also had to exclude any loan repayment, which is repaid at an interest rate below established market rates. And then we also had to exclude by a private duty nurse employed by a private party, because, like I said, all of those exclusions don't exist in FUTA. We also did a few things within our Wyoming Employment Security Law revisions, amending the benefit disqualification period for false claims. We're authorizing benefit repayment agreements, authorizing cancellation of uncollectible fraud overpayment. We're providing for consolidated accounts following a business acquisition, making all employers subject to cancellation of the substitute payment option, providing for personal liability and liens on the property of specified officers and directors of delinquent employers, authorizing installment payment agreements for delinquent employer contribution. We're amending the threshold for incremental bonds for impact industries. And lastly, we are authorizing publishing the entity identity of a state agency employing units as specified. And I can sure go into more detail on any of those if anybody has any questions. Otherwise, I'm assuming you can read the bill, and I will call for the question.
Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Landon's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Senate File 23 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. Senate File 23 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 74. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 74, introduced by Senator Bebout, an act relating to subdivisions. This bill was referred to Committee Number 7, Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions, which recommended it do pass. Ayes, Brown, Dirks, Hales, Illaway, Kimball, Lubnow, Miller, Stubson, Swanitzer, Dan, signed Representative Illaway, Chairman.
You've read the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Illaway?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that Senate File 74 do pass, and I further move the adoption of the Standing Committee Amendment, which will be explained by the good gentleman from House District 14, who will also explain the bill.
Mr. Chairman, is there a Standing Committee Amendment or a Committee of the Whole Amendment?
Sorry about that. Committee of the Whole Amendment. So he gets to explain it after he explains the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Brown.
Madam Chairman, this Senate File 74 is the companion bill to one that we passed out of here already. It addresses the same problem that bill did, which was how do we keep planners and assessors from aggregating separately acquired pieces of property when they fall under common ownership. So this bill, which came from the Senate, attacks the problem a little bit differently than I did in the House, and then the more we worked on it, we decided we needed both. So this bill, on page 1 at line 12, defines a parcel. And it says a parcel is a contiguous piece of property lawfully created or conveyed of record as a single piece of property. And it's as important what that doesn't say as what it does say. What it doesn't say is that two separate pieces of property are a parcel. They're not. It's only a parcel if it was lawfully created or conveyed of record as a single piece of property. Then, Madam Chairman, I would move Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 74. And what that amendment does is adds on and grafts onto this bill, starting at page 1 after line 14, the exact language that we already passed out in House Bill, I think it was House Bill 125. There's a similar effort going on in the Senate to engraft ours onto theirs, and if both efforts are successful, we'll have mirror bills. If one or the other isn't, we'll be able to save it through a conference committee. So that's the purpose of the bill. It's both parts of the bill, both bills. It's all to get at this problem of aggregating property acquired in separate parcels and combined only because it falls under common ownership, where if it continued to be owned by two people, it'd be separate. So I'd stand for any questions, Madam Chairman. Otherwise, I'd call for the question on the Committee of the Whole Amendment.
Okay, we're on the Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1. Is there any discussion? All those in favor of Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1, please say aye.
Aye.
No. The amendment is adopted. Any discussion on the bill? Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Illaway's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Senate File 74 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Senate File 74 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 75. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 75, introduced by Senator Nicholas, an act relating to school district employees' benefits. This bill was referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriations, which recommended that it do pass. Ayes, Berger, Hammonds, Harshman, Jorgensen, Pedersen, Stewart, excused, Philp. Signed, Representative Berger, Chairman.
You heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Berger or Chairman McComey? Chairman Berger. Representative Harshman.
Chairman Berger's not here as a member of the, as a co-sponsor, I think I can move this. Madam Chair, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, I do so with the recommendation that Senate File 75 do pass. There are no amendments, and I'll quickly explain the bill.
Mr. Co-Chair, there is a standing committee amendment. Could you move that as well?
Oh, I'm sorry. There is a standing committee amendment, and I would move for the adoption. I remember that now. The standing committee amendment in appropriations took out folks who run state insurance have an inter-service fund. It's not a general fund. It's an inter-service fund. And this gave the state insurance folks the opportunity to hire more staff and some spending authority out of their interagency funds. The House Appropriations deleted that because we want to talk with the Senate about how many and how much. So I'd urge your adoption of that standing committee amendment.
You've heard the motion on the standing committee amendment. Are you ready for the question? Question having been called, all those in favor say aye. Opposed, no. The standing committee amendment number 1 has been adopted. We're back on the bill.
Thank you, Madam Chairman, and thank you, members. Folks, this is a – I've sent you an email. I was trying to get into the digital age, but I also sent a tree killer out. I think it just hit your desk. Thank you, staff. Really, and that's just for your information. I'm not going to cover that handout, really. You can kind of see what your individual districts, because everybody likes to see their hometown and what their expenses are with insurance. Real quick, and I explained it kind of in my email to all of you, this has been a topic of our Joint Appropriations Committee. The initial bill, school district health insurance, number one, we really took a reach too far. And so we've backed off the four controversial things where we took money away from districts, where we messed with the funding model and took it outside the block grant, where we a provision in the bill where we'd cover excess employees actually cost the state money, and then the irrevocable nature of the bill, where if a school district decided to join the state plan, they could never opt out. So those four things have been removed. I can walk you through the bill quickly. On page one, you can see new language that on the bottom of page two, talks about a school district can be a definition there of a state employee. Page three talks about the election that a school district has to do within 120 days. Flipping over to page four, it talks about it's irrevocable for 5 years. If they join in, they have to stay for 5 years, and then when they opt out, they have to stay out for 5 years, and that's necessary for the smoothing of the big plan. Page five are definitions. Page six are definitions. I'm just trying to hit the high points here. Page seven talks about school districts will basically just write A and I a check every month for the number of participants in the plan. And as we flip over, talks about on page 8 and then 9, page 9 talks about the advisory panel and that it can go, we can add two school type folks to the advisory panel if five or more districts decide to join. But basically, this puts us in the hands of the trustees. Folks, really, as a teacher in Casper, or maybe you have spouses who are teachers, the block grant of education gives each employee, each district, the same amount of health insurance dollars that an employee in A&I or the Department of Ag gets. That's how we built the model, exactly what state employees get. So this money goes out in a block grant. You can see that some districts certainly wouldn't want to join the state plan because they're not spending all of their allotment, and you can see those, and then others that might want to. Over half our districts are self-funded already. They fund their own insurance and they're self-insured, and they have large out-of-state carriers to administer the plan. This simply gives options. Some might want in, some might not, but it's totally optional of local elected school board trustees. So I guess I'd stand for any questions. I don't want to stand up here and kill any more bills, but if you have any questions, I'd like to sure talk about it. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Chairman McComey.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Madam Chairman, I believe this is a step in the right direction. It has a provision where districts, if they opt in, they have to stay for 5 years before they can leave again, which is an important thing because that could have a negative impact, however small, on the state plan, because if a district has a problem, they could do that. But I do believe this is a step in the right direction, and I commend the bringers of the bill for doing that. And I'm on and for the bill.
Representative Landon. Okay, question having been called, all those in favor of Representative Harshman's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Senate File 75 do pass. Please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Senate File 75 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 57. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 57, introduced by Senator Meyer, an act relating to consumer protection, telephone solicitation, cell phones. This bill is referred to Committee Number 7, Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions, which recommended it do pass with amendments. Ayes, Brown, Dirks, Hales, Illaway, Kimball, Lubnow, Stubson, No. Miller, Zwanitzer, Dan. Signed, Representative Illaway, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Illaway?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with a recommendation that Senate File 57 do pass, and I further move the adoption of the Standing Committee amendments. Let me explain how the Standing Committee amendment fits into Senate File 57. This particular bill is in reference to telephone solicitations by cell phone. If you'll wait a minute, let me get my notes. We've all been plagued at times by people trying to sell us any manner of evil, whatever, over the landline. Well, lots of people have given up landlines and are going to wireless, to cell phones. So we felt that it was important to try and help those folks with cell phones, because any call coming in is going to cost you money. And we don't think that's correct. We don't think that's fair, that if somebody calls you trying to sell you something and you didn't want to talk to them, it's still going to cost you money. So what we've done on the bottom of page one, we've stripped out the language on page one, lines 14, 15, and 16, and over on page two, lines 1, 2, 3, and 4, and what it says is the consumer advocate may determine which prefixes or telephone numbers are used in Wyoming primarily for cellular telephone service by determining prefixes or telephone numbers or by utilizing information available from the North American Numbering Plan Administrator, the National Pooling Administrator, the Local Number Portability Administrator, or any suitable least cost alternative as determined by the consumer advocate. The consumer advocate shall report these prefixes and telephone numbers to the national do not call list. Now, when you are trying to go to the do not call list, you have to use the cell phone that you do not want used for people calling to sell you something. And you'll remember that when you did that with your landline. Then on page two, we've got definitions. Of an unpublished cellular telephone number means a cellular telephone number that has not been requested by the subscriber to be published in any telephone directory or any list of telephone service subscribers. And, again, an unpublished cellular telephone number means a cellular telephone number whose prefix has been determined by the Office of the Consumer Advocate to be primarily for cellular telephone service. Then on bottom of page two, we talk about unsolicited telephone sales calls means a telephonic sales call other than a call made in response to an express request of the person called. And we go through and say what these are. On D, line 11 and page 3, we've talked about by a telephone solicitor or merchant making less than 225 unsolicited calls per year, and that's primarily for those people that you might end up with the high school is going to have a sales program, and they want to make it calls to folks, and maybe they're selling pumpkins or they're selling candy or whatever. So it's by a telephone solicitor or merchant making less than 225 unsolicited calls per year. The bottom of page three, it talks about no telephone solicitor or merchant shall willfully make or cause to be made any unsolicited telephonic sales calls to any unpublished cellular telephone number. And the act is effective July 1, 2010.
Thank you. You've heard the motion on the Standing Committee Amendment. Are you ready for the question? Question having been called, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The standing committee amendment number one has been adopted. We're back on the bill. Representative Zwanitzer, Dan.
Thank you, Madam Chairwoman. I would ask you to vote no on this bill, just out of philosophical reasons that I don't believe it's the government's job to take my phone number and put it on any list, even if the government believes it is helping me. I don't know what the government does with my phone number when it puts it on this list. As a person, as an individual, I can go, I can register on the Do Not Call list, I can sign up my own phone number. To do that, I have to give my email. I'm not sure what's going to happen if we're making the state give, I don't think they have access to my email, but we'll put it for the Office of the Consumer Advocate's email, and then if there's a problem, they'll email the OCA, and then they can find me, tell me there's a problem. I didn't understand the testimony in committee. I don't understand the rationale for the bill. No other state in the country does this. If you want to go on the Do Not Call list, you can sign up already as an individual. The testimony we heard in committee was the reason for this bill was brought to us by a group in our state that works with the over 50 population, and the concern is a lot of these people don't use the internet very well and have problems getting on the Do Not Call list to protect their numbers. And I guess I would believe that if this group believes that's the problem, they can organize a drive or do it themselves without making the government get involved. And I would ask you to vote no on this bill. Thanks.
Chairman Illaway.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. We're not going to belabor the point. There is a telephone directory of cellular numbers. We are asking that the consumer advocate, just exactly what it says, may determine which prefixes or telephone numbers are used in Wyoming, primarily for cellular service, and those are not the area code, it's the second three digits, by determining prefixes or by utilizing those various pooling administrator, the local number portability administrator, and they're going to, the only thing the consumer advocate is going to do is shall report those prefixes of telephone numbers to the national Do Not Call list. If you want your phone number read on the Do Not Call list, yes, you can. But the Do Not Call list needs to have those prefixes started. So I would ask you to pass this bill. It's costing you money when somebody calls you and you did not want it.
Do I hear the question? Question being called. All those in favor of Representative Illaway's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Senate File 57 do pass. Please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
Senate File 57 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File number 6. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 6, introduced by the Corporation Committee, an act relating to improvement and service districts. This bill was referred to Committee number 7, Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions, which recommended it do pass with amendments. Ayes, Dirks, Hales, Kimball, Lubno, Stubson. No, Brown, Illaway, Miller, Zwanitzer, Dan. Signed, Representative Illaway, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Illaway?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Senate File 6 do pass, and I further move the adoption of the Standing Committee Amendment. And the good gentleman from, he doesn't remember it, but from House District 55 is going to discuss the bill. But I would ask for the question on the Standing Committee Amendment.
You've heard the motion on the Standing Committee Amendment. Are you ready for the question? Question having been called, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The Standing Committee Amendment number one has been adopted. We're back on the bill. Representative Miller.
Well, let's see here. I think I was a no on this bill in committee. Was I, Mr. Chairman? Okay, Madam Chairman, this is on the improvement in special districts. Page 2, we're inserting some new languages, including charges for operation and maintenance of any improved assessment. Under 1812-106, a petition to form a district or to change the purpose of a district. Question.
Madam
Chairman Elway.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. What this did, it added some language to the ability to form improvement districts, and what it said was, or to change the purposes of a district. And then on page 2, line 16, a petition for formation of a district may limit the improvements or services to be provided by the district. Nothing in this subsection shall limit the ability to form a district for provisions of any or all improvements or services. And a petition to change the purposes of a district, this could be a water and sewer district or whatever, shall proceed in accordance with the process for formation of a district as provided in this article. And then it talks about, on page 3, powers of the district. Each district may, new language, in accordance with the purposes for which it was created. Lots of purposes, but little Romanet 8, establish and collect charges for water, sanitation, and related services and the use of improvements or services provided by the district, including the authority to change the amount or rate of any charges and to pledge the revenues from any charges for the payment of district indebtedness. And that's the bill, and I'll call for the question.
Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Elloway's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises.
Madam Chairman.
Do I see someone who wants to discuss the bill?
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Miller, are you sure?
Thank you,
sure?
Madam Chair. Yeah, I remember this bill now. And I was a no in committee, and I thought five of us were no's in committee, but apparently it squeaked out. And basically, this would allow, like, if you have a special district, like a, you know, for snow removal or something like that, if you still live in the district, but the majority of the people may live out of state, moved away, they could still vote to discontinue the snow plowing in your area. And that's what one of the items in the discussion in the committee that got quite a few of us to vote no. And so, again, this is going to allow the majority to change the purpose of the district from the original purpose. So be careful with your vote here.
Representative Teeters.
I just have some questions. I'm curious as to what the need was for this, and I think we'd all like to hear. I mean, if my fire district wants to become a sewer district, now they can do that the way I'm reading this bill. Maybe I'm confused, but I'd like to hear why we need it.
Chairman Elloway.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. This is an act relating to improvement and service districts. It's not special districts. It's an improvement and service districts. A fire district, as the gentleman from just up the road a piece, a fire district is a special district. It is a fire district. But this is for improvement and service districts.
Representative Stepson.
Thank you, Madam Chairwoman. I guess one other comment behind the bill and why it was brought and why we dealt with it. As it currently stands, there's no restriction whatsoever on changing the purpose of improvement and service districts. So you can sort of do a double whammy on people. You have to have 60% approval to form a district, so you can get your 60% of people together, form the district, and then after you're done, as long as you've got a majority, then you can all of a sudden switch the purpose of a district. All this says is, look, if you're going to not do what you said you were going to do in order to get that initial approval for the improvement service district, you have to have the approval of the same amount of people. And so it just says when I'm voting for the formation of a service and improvement district, they're not going to be able to change it on me without my consent. That's really the nuts and bolts of it.
Representative Lubnow.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. An improvement and service district is one that
is necessary to acquire, construct, operate, maintain local improvements, obtain improvements for services by contracting for the same with any city, town, or to perform any special local services which embraces the use or enjoyment or improvement of the facility. Our statutes are very, very clear on how to form them and how to manage them, but they get a little bit fuzzy on what happens with you when you change the purpose. And is it a majority of the people? Is it just a majority of the board of directors? Is it just whoever the manager was? And so this isn't broadening it out, but clamping down on the ability to change the purpose to make it the same as the petition to form a district, which is 60% of the persons. And then you can still expand the district, or you can set up another district if you want to, but you have to follow the process for formation of a district. And the process of formation of a district requires a notice and a resolution and hearing on the objections, and then a whole process that you have to go through to do that, which makes it more difficult to change the purposes of the special district than what we have now, which is we don't know. So that's what the purpose behind the bill was.
Representative Brown.
Well, Madam Chairman, I didn't like this bill in committee. I voted against it, and I continue to think it's bad public policy. We have a set of statutes about improvement and service districts. It's Chapter 12 and Title 18 of the statutes, and it lays out in I don't know how many pages all about improvement and service districts, including bonding authority, all sorts of things that they can do and what they're for. And that is an established body of law that is relied upon by bond counsel and is relied upon by a lot of property owners to define what an improvement and service district can do. If we pass this statute, it will permit someone to start to carve into the purposes that are enumerated for an improvement and service district without really taking into account all the unintended consequences. And we were unable in committee to figure out what all the unintended consequences might be. These districts have the authority to do a whole bunch of things. Coupled with those are a whole bunch of powers. Coupled with that is a way to finance things that are permitted under the district, Now, we're going to let somebody come in and cherry-pick this thing, and with a petition, if they can get 60% of the property owners to do it, cherry-pick out part of it and say, well, yeah, I accept. You can't do this and you can't do that. And there are issues about existing indebtedness that weren't considered in this bill. And there's issues about, as you heard a previous speaker say, there are issues about property owners who are absentee. And there are issues about politics within these districts, which tend to run rampant. And because those issues are unresolved, it just impresses me as bad public policy. And I was a no vote in committee, and I'll vote against it here for that reason. I think if you don't want to be an improvement and service district, don't be one. If you want to be one, then be what the legislature defined it to be. And let's not let people start cherry picking and cutting off slices of the pie to fit their own unique or individual needs. So on and against the bill.
Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Illaway's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Senate File 6 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
Senate File 6 has failed the Committee of the Whole. Pursuant to H.R. 10-5B, the bill having failed a voice vote, a standing division vote is required. All those in favor, please stand. Those opposed, please stand. Having failed a standing division vote, a roll call vote is required. The chief clerk will call the roll.
Anderson, Bagby, Barbuto, Berger, Flake, Flickrey, Bonner, Brechtel, Brown, Buchanan, Bird, Kennedy, Carson, Childers, Cohey, Connolly, Kraft, Davison, Dirks, Edmonds, Esquivel, Gilmore, Gingery, Goggles, Hales, Hallinan excused, Hammonds, Harshman, Harvey, Illaway, Yagi, Jorgensen, Kimball, Landon, Lockhart, Lubno, Madden, McKim, McComey, Miller, Millen, Moniz, Patton, Peasley, Pedersen, Peterson, Philp excused, Korberg, Roscoe, Simlick, Shepperson, Stewart, Stubson, Teeters, Thompson, Throne, Wallace, Zwanitzer Dave, Mr. Speaker, I am about to close the vote. Are there any changes? The vote is closed. 11 ayes, 47 noes, 2 excused.
Pursuant to H.R. 105B, Senate file number 6, having failed a roll call vote, is indefinitely postponed. The next bill for our consideration is Senate file 34. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate file 34, introduced by Senator Esquivel, an act relating to insurance coverage, continuation of insurance coverage. This bill was referred to committee number 7, Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions, which recommended that it do pass. Ayes with amendments. Ayes, Brown, Dirks, Hales, Illaway, Kimball, Lubno, Miller, Stubson, Swanitzer, Dan. Signed, representing Illaway, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Illaway?
I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with recommendation that Senate File 34 do pass, and I further move the adoption of the Standing Committee amendments, they're behind me. All right. And the good lady from District 11 is going to discuss the bill.
Representative Throne.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. This is a simple insurance bill to close a gap in insurance coverage. It's a bill that made it to general file last year after we'd worked out all the differences, and I'm happy to see that we've had time to consider it this year. This issue came to me from a constituent, and even though the bill will not help him, he would like to not have other families put in similar situations. To be brief, the family, and it involves a local fireman, his wife had a medically necessary procedure just prior to his group insurance policy being transferred to a new company. It was towards the end of the year, and after the policy had been transferred to a new carrier, his wife developed MRSA, which I think, as we all know, is a very serious infection, life-threatening, and very expensive to treat. The new insurance carrier denied coverage for the MRSA because they would not have covered the procedure that was covered under the prior policy. As a result, this family has had to go into bankruptcy, has caused extreme financial difficulty, and has put a strain on the family relationship. So we proposed a solution last year. It didn't have time to go through. The insurance Essentially, the assurance companies worked with us to determine who would be best to cover. No one really disagreed that somebody should have covered the situation, but there's a gap in our regulations. So the only consideration was whether the prior carrier should cover or the succeeding carrier. And the insurance companies have told us that for their business reasons, it's actually preferable to require the succeeding carrier to cover the costs. And there's a time-limited procedure. It's 90 days. So it's not a huge burden on the succeeding carrier. They can manage the risk, and they don't see it as a problem. It's only going to come up in, you know, pretty isolated circumstances. But when it does happen to a family, the consequences can be devastating. The employer was covered, working, had health insurance, and suddenly the policy changed and a major expense that they had a reasonable expectation would be covered wasn't. The standing committee amendment, all it does is specify that the succeeding carrier will provide the coverage. Again, there was an opposition to this, and I would urge your passage, and I stand for any questions.
You've heard the motion on the standing committee amendment. Are you ready for the question? Question having been called, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The standing committee amendment number one has been adopted. We're back on the bill. Question having been called, all those in favor of Chairman Illoway's motion that when the committee of the whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Senate File 34 do pass. Please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Senate File 34 has passed the committee of the whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 27. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 27, introduced by Senator Case, an act relating to administration and government competition. This bill was referred to Committee Number 9, Minerals, Business, and Economic Development, which recommended it do pass with amendments. Ayes, Brechtel, Byrd, Kraft, Harvey, Lockhart, Moniz, Roscoe, Stubson, Swanitzer, Dave, signed Representative Lockhart, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Lockhart?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I move that when the committee of the whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Senate File 27 do pass, and I further move the adoption of the standing committee amendment. And I'd like to turn over the explanation of both the standing committee and the bill or the Senate file to the good representative from House District 52.
Representative Wallace.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I bring to you this, I co-sponsored this particular piece of legislation because I think it's yet another way for us to provide citizen access and information that can be truly useful and beneficial to our businesses. What this does is it provides a process whereby anyone could lodge a complaint on a website when they were concerned that government at any level was doing something that could better or more efficiently or more rightfully be done by the private sector. I think what I'll do is just include the standing committee amendments in the context of the discussion. So we ask that this process should be in operation before the 1st of July, 2010, on page 2, on line 2. In the following section, which begins on page 2, line 4, we talk about that link. And what we added in the standing committee amendment was that citizens should have access to the summary data as well as the ability to lodge a complaint. It goes on to talk about what should be involved and what they should be able to relate into the system and be able to get the summary data out of. At the top of page 3, there's another insertion where part of what's required here is that the governor's office needs to review these concerns. And if a state or local government is involved, that they need to provide information. And what the standing committee added was that that information needed to be reasonably related to the complaint. It wasn't an open-ended blank check for the governor's office to ask anything and everything of a local government, but it had to be reasonably related to the complaint. Down on line 11 on page 3, we just said that this should begin July 1. Beginning July 1, 2010, the governor's office shall annually report to the legislature, and that the reports should contain what they report to us is the number of concerns with unfair competition received for each government entity subject to a lodge concern, the number of concerns lodged, and the number of citizens lodging concerns for each state entity which is a subject of a concern, a summary of whether the program, function, or activity complained of was identified in the entity's strategic plan as one which could be implemented more effectively by another level of government or by a private entity. On page 4, where we defined commercial activity, that was an amendment that the Senate, or the body on the other end of the hall, included in the engrossed copy, and it was pulled out of a mid-90s piece of legislation, as I recall. Anyway, the standing committee on the House side thought that the tail end of that didn't really apply, so they inserted a colon or a semicolon right after enterprise on line 17 and deleted the rest. So a commercial activity means performing services or providing goods within a state or local government entity or to other state or local government entities or to the general public, which could normally be obtained from private enterprise. Continues with some definitions on page 5, and on page 6 says that this act would become effective immediately. The other thing that I think that you might be interested in knowing before we vote on the standing committee amendment is the fiscal note, which didn't get attached to the engrossed copy, but it did have an interesting note. It says no significant fiscal or personnel impact, but it does say the governor's staff believes that they can accomplish this directive with existing budget dollars. Should be noted that until the legislated link is in place and operational, it is difficult to project the number of filings that would be received and how they will impact the department workload in the long run. The volume is not expected to be very large, but if that expectation is false, then additional funding may be needed. With that, I'll stand for questions.
You've heard the motion on the standing committee amendment. Are you ready for the question? Question having been called, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The standing committee amendment number 1 has been adopted. We're back on the bill. Madam Majority Whip.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I guess I just have one question regarding this bill. Is it the intent of this bill then that every concern, I guess it's not even a complaint, it's just a logic concern, every concern that's lodged on the website, regardless of the entity that it's involved, any branch of government, state, local, district, is it the intent that this concern will be fully vetted by the governor's office with some type of conclusion? Madam Chairman.
Representative Wallace.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Yes, but that fully vetting may be extremely brief, depending on what the concern was. And that's why the governor's office in their fiscal note, part of what we're doing here is providing a system for the first time to collect this kind of information. So until we actually start, we don't really know what we're going to get or what the level how many of these kinds of complaints or how detailed or in, so the first part of the process is just to provide a way to collect this information in one place. And then I think that if you go to page 3, part of your answer may be that it's not the intention of this bill. If you look on page 3, line 7, that section there where no hearing or appeal shall be permitted under the Wyoming Administrative Procedure Act for any omission or any action taken under this act, I think, if I'm understanding this correctly, I think what that means is that what's envisioned here is not a full-fledged bureaucratic process. It's just merely collecting this stuff, allowing the governor's office to ask questions and clarify the situation and to communicate back to those county governments what those concerns have been.
Representative Hales.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I really am concerned about page 3, numbers, line 7. I really question whether we want to do any action or pass any bill where there isn't an appeal process involved. We may not think that we don't want this to happen, but most of us all want the chance to have an appeal if we are charged with something. Thank you.
Chairman Lockhart.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. This shouldn't lead to charges or anything. This is a data gathering effort that will be done primarily electronically, so you can record the number of calls and on the issues with the intent to find out how much is really going on with government competition with the private sector. And it was left a little bit open because nobody knows the extent to which the contacts will be made, and we won't know that until we have the system in place and some experience with it. And if, in fact, we find that the government is doing something that the private sector believes they could do better, at least we have a data point to start a look at that, and the effort is to give the private sector more opportunities than they have currently under the existing system and no recourse system available to them, and this is a start. That was the background, and that was the testimony of the folks before the committee when we heard the Senate file.
Representative Miller.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Again, on page 3, lines 11 through 13, this information is reported to the governor's office. They keep track of it, and then they report to the legislature annually on a number of items, what the complaints are, and then that's the proper time for us to take legislative action to maybe stop something we think is anti-competition here in Wyoming by our own government. That's the purpose of the bill. It's a very simple first step that we don't have in place anywhere right now.
Representative Patton.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. As I read this bill, it struck me that what we're really talking about is the ombudsman approach, and that perhaps we could have something that is a little bit more neutral than political in gathering the information and supplying the information to the public generally and us specifically. As I read it, the review by the governor's office on page 2, line 23, and it provides here that the governor's office on page 1, line 14, shall establish a process. And then we come back on line 2 and then on page 2 and page 3, line 11, where it's the governor's office that shall annually report. I think there's a good idea that's here, but we make it political by virtue of imposing it into the governor's office, and perhaps we could encourage the governor's office, if we have the funds to do it, to start looking at an ombudsman. something like the advocacy group and the Public Service Commission. Not a bad idea at all. I just am concerned that we politicize something that doesn't necessarily have to be political.
Representative Lubnow.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. As I read this bill, and somebody correct me if I'm wrong, if somebody has a complaint, they lodge the complaint with the link, and then the government entity gets a chance to respond with any other information it deems appropriate, so that it's just not a data point, which might be a disgruntled data point maker making data points, because the government has an opportunity to respond. Would the sponsor be amenable to an amendment that also includes the responses of the governmental entities to their reports or concerns, so that we just don't have data points, but data points in context?
Representative Wallace. Chairman Lockhart.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. The discussion in the committee was that as much as possible, this would be, and I probably used a bad expression with the data point. I didn't mean to say that at just a point in an action it happened. We'll start to accumulate issues. And I can't give you the explicit examples that may show up because we haven't got anything like this in place. But if you start to get contacts that such and such a state agency is doing something that could be done better in a private sector, and you have the response back that no, we think that government-owned equipment, educated and employed state employees can do it better than the private sector, you start to see a number of those. You may be able to find out that there's a place where we need to take a look at it as a legislature. We're not sure exactly what this is going to drive. It's really trying to get a transparent way of recording issues that our citizens have with government competition with the private sector and see what's out there and get it at least some sunlight. And I didn't mean just a point. This stuff will accumulate if it works the way it was described to us. And apparently it's been done in other states like Minneapolis. There was one expression of how this was done some years ago that transferred a sanitary service from the city government to the private sector after people began to say, hey, we can do this better, and did.
Representative Wallace.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. In answer to the question that was posed, certainly very open to that suggestion, and I might even point to where we included in our standing committee amendment an access to summary data, might consider some language that including a brief synopsis of any findings or results, however that should be worded. That would be a friendly amendment.
Do I hear a question? Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Lockhart's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Senate File 27 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
The chair is in doubt. All those in favor, please stand. Please stand in one place. Opposed, please stand. Okay. All right, please stop wiggling. Okay. Pursuant to H.R. 105B, the bill having, Senate File 27 has failed the Committee of the Whole. I'm confused. All right. Senate File 27 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move that the Committee of the Whole rise and report.
You have heard the motion. All those in favor say aye. Opposed, no. The motion carries. The reading clerk will read the Committee of the Whole report.
I think you have to wait for the chair to say that.
Will the reading clerk please read the Committee of the Whole report?
Mr. Speaker, your Committee of the Whole, having had under consideration bills on general file, beg leave to report as follows. Senate File 24, recommended do pass. Senate File 32, recommended do pass. Senate File 41, recommended do pass. Senate File 2, recommended do pass. Senate File 36, amended, recommended do pass. Senate File 37, recommended do pass. Senate File 62, recommended do pass. Senate File 71, recommended do pass. Senate File 53, recommended do pass. Senate File 54, recommended do pass. Senate File 15, amended, recommended do pass. Senate File 23, recommended do pass. Senate File 74, amended, recommended do pass. Senate File 75, amended, recommended do pass. Senate File 57, amended, recommended do pass. Senate File 6, amended, following a failed roll call vote, the bill is deemed indefinitely postponed. Senate File 34, amended, recommended do pass. Senate File 27, amended, recommended do pass. Signed, Representative Connolly, Chairman.
I move the adoption of the Committee of the Whole report.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye. Opposed, no. Committee of the Whole report is adopted. Thank you, Representative Connolly. Ladies and gentlemen, we're going to do third reading on the Senate budget bill. But before we do that, we've got a couple other things to do. Reports from standing committees.
Mr. Speaker, your committee number 6, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources, to whom is referred Senate File 69, reports back to that it recommends a do pass. Ayes, Bonner, Brown, Childers, Connolly, Davison, Yeagie, Millen, Shepperson, Thompson, signed, Representative Childers, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 6, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources, to whom is referred Senate File 78, respectfully reports same back to the House with recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Bonner, Brown, Childers, Connolly, Davison, Yeagie, Shepperson, Thompson, no, Millen, signed, Representative Childers, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 8, Transportation, Highways, and Military Affairs, to whom is referred Senate File 40, respectfully reports back to the House that it recommends it do pass. Ayes, Blake, Carson, Cohey, Gilmore, Madden, McKim, Peterson. No, Zwanitzer, Dave. Excused, Hallen, Ensign, representing Cohey, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 8, Transportation, Highways, and Military Affairs, to whom is referred Senate File 56, engrossed, respectfully report same back to the House with recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Blake, Carson, Cohey, Gilmore, Madden, McKim, Peterson, Zwanitzer, Dave. Excused, Hallen, Ensign, representing Cohey, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 8, Transportation, Highways, and Military Affairs, to whom is referred Senate File 20, engrossed, respectively report same back to the House with recommendation that it do pass with the following amendments. Ayes, Blake, Carson, Cohey, Gilmore, Madden, McKim, Peterson, Zwanitzer, Dave. Excused, Hallen, Ensign, representing Cohey, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 4, Education, to whom is referred Senate File 42, respectfully report same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Connolly, Kraft, Dirks, Lubno, McKim, McComey, no. Rectal, Yagi, Teeters. Signed, Representative McComey, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 1, Judiciary, to whom is referred Senate File 68, engrossed, respectfully report same back to the House with recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Begbie, Barbudo, Blickery, Kennedy, Gingrey, Beasley, Quarburg. Excused, Patton, Throne. Signed, Representative Quarburg, Vice Chair.
We've already worked all those.
Mr. Speaker, your committee number 1, Judiciary, to whom was referred Senate File 25, engrossed, respectfully report same back to the House with recommendation that it do pass with the following amendments. Ayes, Begbie, Barbudo, Blickery, Kennedy, Gingrey, Beasley, Quarburg, Throne. No, Patton. Signed, Representative Gingrey, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 2, Appropriations, to whom is referred Senate File 52, engrossed, respectfully report same back to the House with recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Berger, Hammonds, Jorgensen, Stewart, excused, Harshman, Pedersen, Phelps. Signed, Representative Berger, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 2, Appropriations, to whom is referred Senate File 66, engrossed, respectfully report same back to the House with recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Berger, Hammonds, Jorgensen, Stewart, excused, Harshman, Pedersen, Philp, signed, Representative Berger, Chairman.
I'm sorry.
Messages from the Senate.
Message number 173. Mr. Speaker, the bills list below pass the Senate on third reading by the vote indicated. House Bill 5, Insurance Risk-Based Capital Revisions, Ayes 30, no 0. Signed, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Mr. Speaker, the bills list below pass the Senate on third reading by the vote indicated. This is message 174, House Bill 6, County Officials, Administrative and Fiscal Duties, Ayes 30, no 0. Signed, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 175, Mr. Speaker, the bills list below pass the Senate on third reading by the vote indicated. House Bill 22, Streamline Sales Use Tax Amendments, Ayes 29, no 1. Signed, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 176, Mr. Speaker, the bills listed below pass the Senate on third reading by the vote indicated. House Bill 24, Insurance Requirements for Newly Purchased Vehicles, Ayes 30, no 0, signed Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 177, Mr. Speaker, House Bill number 25, Child Care Development Fund. The House bill listed above passed on a third reading in an amended form by the vote indicated, Ayes 26, noes 4. The Senate respectfully asks the House to concur by adopting the listed achievements. Amendments. Signed, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 178. Mr. Speaker, concurrence requested. House Bill 26, Medical Review Panel. The House bill listed above passed on a third reading in amended form by the vote indicated. Ayes 30, noes 0. This is Medical Review Panel. The Senate respectfully asks the House to concur by adopting listed amendments. Signed, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 179. Mr. Speaker, the bills listed below pass the Senate on third reading by the vote indicated. House Bill 32, Board of Nursing, Continuing Jurisdiction, Ayes 27, noes 3. Signed, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 180. Mr. Speaker, the bills as below pass the Senate on third reading by the vote indicated. House Bill 41, School Finance Distance Education. Ayes 21, noes 9, signed Donnie Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 181. Mr. Speaker, the bills as below pass the Senate on third reading by the vote indicated. House Bill 46, Omnibus Water Bill Planning. Ayes 30, no 0, signed Donnie Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 182. Mr. Speaker, the bills as below pass the Senate on third reading by the vote indicated. House Bill 49, Manufacturing Sales and Use Tax Exemption. Ayes 25, noes 5, signed Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 183. Mr. Speaker, the bills as below pass the Senate on third reading by the vote indicated. House Bill 56, Bonded Indebtedness Mill Levy Supplement. Ayes 30, noes 0, signed Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 184. Mr. Speaker, the bills list below pass the Senate on third reading by the vote indicated. House Bill 66, Governmental Claims Act Process. Ayes 30, no 0, signed Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 185. Mr. Speaker, the bills list below pass the Senate on third reading by the vote indicated. House Bill 86, Medicaid Elderly Care. Ayes 29, noes 1, signed Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 186. Mr. Speaker, the bills as below pass the Senate on third reading by the vote indicated. House Bill 101, Electricity Generated from Wind Taxation. Ayes 29, noes 1, signed Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 187. Mr. Speaker, the bills as below pass the Senate on third reading by the vote indicated. House Bill 109, Compulsory School Attendance. Ayes 25, noes 5, signed Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 188, Mr. Speaker. House Bill 110, Higher Education Endowment Challenge Programs. The House bill listed above passed on a third reading in an amended form as follows by the vote indicated. Ayes 30, noes 0. The Senate respectfully asks the House to concur by adopting the listed amendments. Signed Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 189. Mr. Speaker, the bills as below pass the Senate on third reading by the vote indicated. House Bill 124, Lien Statement Notice. Ayes 30, no 0. Signed, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 190. Mr. Speaker, House Joint Resolution number 8, Opposition to Northern Rockies Ecosystem Protection Act. The House bill listed above passed on third reading in an amended form as follows by the vote indicated. Ayes 23, no 7. Senate respectfully asks the House to concur by adopting the listed amendments. Message 191, Mr. Speaker, House Bill 27, Armed Forces License Plate Fees Distribution. The House bill listed above passed on third reading in an amended form by the vote indicated. Ayes 26, noes 4. The Senate respectfully asks the House to concur by adopting the listed amendments. Signed, Donnie Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 192. Mr. Speaker, House Bill 84, Gold Star License Plates. The House bill listed above passed on third reading in an amended form as follows by the vote indicated. Ayes 30, no 0. The Senate respectfully asks the House to concur by adopting the listed amendments. Signed, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 194. Mr. Speaker, the Senate did concur on House amendments to the bills as below by the vote indicated. Senate File 47, Paramutual Wagering Simulcasting. Ayes 27, noes 3. Signed, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 195, Mr. Speaker, the Senate did concur on House amendments to the bills as below by the vote indicated. Senate File 10, State Parks, Bear River State Park. Ayes 30, noes 0. Signed, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 196, Mr. Speaker, the Senate did concur on House amendments to bills as below by the vote indicated. Senate File 11, State Parks Acquisition and Disposition of Lands. Ayes 23, noes 7, signed Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 197. Mr. Speaker, the Senate did concur on House amendments to bills listed below by the vote indicated. Senate File 12, State Parks and Historic Sites, Boundaries and Designations. Ayes 29, noes 1. Signed, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 198. Mr. Speaker, the Senate did concur on House amendments to the bills as below. Senate File 28, State Loan and Investment Board Loan Refinancing. Ayes 30, noes 0. Signed, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk.
standing committee reports. This is it.
Standing committee reports.
Mr. Speaker, your committee number two, Appropriations, has reviewed Senate File 1. Pursuant to Joint Rule 14-1-E-1 and 2, the following lists are provided. Signed, Rosie Berger, Chairman.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, you have the Standing Committee report that's signed by the Chairman. If you don't have that, it's coming out to you now. It's one page that shows the identical amendments to House amendments, and then other adopted amendments. And you also have a packet of adopted Senate amendments, a reconciliation between the House and Senate positions, one pager, and then the Senate file amendments on the long sheet ordered by identicals and non-identicals. Chairman Berger. Excuse me. But that order of business of bills on third reading, Senate File 1.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen, and I'm just giving you homework for the weekend. I don't think I can answer anything too seriously at this point of the day at the end of the week, but we thought this would be a good opportunity for you to take some time to look over all of the amendments. Quite honestly, we're fairly close between the House and the Senate. As you know, we're a little more creative over here on the House side, so we did some things a little bit differently. But what I'd like you to do, I think the easiest thing today is that on the identical amendments, we really don't need to take any action or discuss those. Those should be fairly similar. And really, most of the things that you'll hear that are non-identical on the Senate side, you heard. We just didn't pass them on this side. So what I'd like to do then is start on the bottom of page 20 of all of the amendments, your thick packet if you have it. And that goes in correspondence with the one pager that has them all lined up for you based in number order. So it's a little different than when we work the budget. And the first non-identical amendment that we're working on is Senate 2005. I don't even know how to say that anymore. Section 25, the Department of Employment Workers' Compensation. This is an amendment by Senator Scott that directs the Department of Health or Department of Employment and using the existing funds to do a conduct a trial study on back pain and a management control group and to come out with some results on that, because my understanding from testimony that we had in JAC is that they, in Wyoming, we have an extremely high back and spine injury number. The second one.
What page are you on?
That was on the top of page 21.
Okay.
There are no dollars on that amendment. At the bottom of 21 is the Department of Transportation, number 6, 2006. Again, no dollars. This has to do with instructing the Department of Transportation that heliports are permissible in their construction design. On page 22, 2018, Department of Correction, this, you're familiar with this. This is the sex offender treatment program for $200,000 that was added in on the Senate side. This is in regard to the Department of Corrections deletion of 10% of their budget during the interim. I think there's a question.
Chairman Landon.
Excuse me, Mr. Speaker. I'm just wondering a little bit about process. We often will go to a period whenever you would like some indication of the feeling of the body. Is that something that you're considering for Monday, or did I miss that? Or?
Mr. Chairman, we are not doing that anymore. We didn't do that last year. I believe the conference committee, whoever it will be, will have a good sense of what the votes were. Plus, on these, we didn't adopt them. And we have found that that process was not really helpful in the budget, to the budget conference committee. So thank you.
And Mr. Speaker, certainly if any of you have input that we should have prior to going into committee, please feel free to get a hold of me. Okay, so we're on 2046, and this is the in regard to the CIO, so with A&I and with our advancement of technology. This was an ongoing conversation throughout JAC over the last 3 months in coordinating that effort as we move forward. We've talked to you about before, as we've been trying to just get a better handle on what we are doing in state government with technology. That was by Senator Nicholas, and again, it was just a direction for that to be done with some reporting back to us and no additional dollars. The education school finance on number 3009 on page 23, this is the school bus funding, transportation funding, and what that does is it takes it back to the 2009-10 budget numbers, and so it decreases funding in the school foundation, and also there will be recapture that will be credited, and there will be about a total of $8 million. I think here it's profiled at a little over $6 million, but they're still doing some more calculations on that, the savings that would bring. The next one is 3011, and that has to do with the liquor store, our favorite subject this session. And the First Amendment they just deleted it completely from their side. And then in the Second Amendment, what they did is they brought it back and took the money out of the budget reserve account. And we'll tell you about that, how they got that money, a little bit later. So that's how they're handling it. And then the language as far as the building that we are currently in, as far as when it's sold and all of those requirements, are exactly the same as far as that language goes. On 3015, regards to AML money, this is very similar to the amendment that we had here, but there's just with the dynamic compaction, it's just slightly different language, which will get worked out. The amendment that passed on the Senate side is on school capital construction on page 25, section 333, amendment 3016, and that has to do with a reappropriated dollars for the Bighorn School. The next amendment is 26, and I'm sorry I did not have a chance to go through line by line on the language changes, but this is with recalibration on amendment 3017. So we'll just have to go through that and see what our differences are there. On page 27, amendment 3021, this has to do, we've had this discussion, but this is about making certain that the 900 series dollars are reported. First, they're getting permission from the agency director, and then they are required to report back to the governor with those expenditures. On number 3023 at the bottom of 28, this is a continuation on language for the Select Committee on Developmental Disabilities, just adding in another component of information that we'd like to receive on the budget items of the providers. Then on page 29, there was a deletion of about $12.1 million out of the auditor's office, out of the $48 million that was set aside for the retirement system. And that is the money that was moved into the budget reserve account, which is what the Senate used to pay for the liquor store. Warehouse, excuse me. And if you want to track that further, I can kind of explain that to you. But if you take the numbers that you have in your Senate file 72 and you subtract that from the $48 million, and then just give me one moment. And then on your goldenrod, if you go to appropriations on page 2, you can see the expenditures that were required from the Senate file 72. And then if you turn to the school foundation page, you can find the amount that was obligated for the schools, and they're part of the insurance. So that's how they came up with that formula, and obviously we didn't have that amendment on this side. So that's the difference there. All righty. Then on 3028, this is the telehealth amendment that we both passed, but we just did a different way of funding. We on the House side took it from the general fund, and they took it from the governor's office. Very clever, I thought, but don't tell them. On number 3029 on page 30 is the Wildlife Trust Challenge Account, and what we've done there is extended, what they have done is extended the date to 2012. And this is on their grants, matching grants. Page 31 is the amendment that failed on this side, but this is the out, it's 3032, and it's the out-of-state travel and publication restrictions that we discussed. And it has to be, the final report and information has to be approved by the governor. Those are the amendments that we differ on. So if you take out the other reconciliation sheet between the House and the Senate, I think that that helps you just kind of clearly see where we differ. Our LSRA balance was at $704 million approximately, and theirs on the Senate side is at approximately $718, but you see how they move some of their money around over there. And the things that we have over here that will go into conference, of course, are developmental disabilities, the additional $4.1 million, the Judicial District 9C clerk, the Constitution printing of $10,000. Telehealth, of course, is a difference of how we appropriated the funds. Then we have the local government at $10 million and the sex offender program at $200,000. How we, at the end of the day, purchased the liquor warehouse. Those are the main differences there that will affect the general fund and the budget reserve account. When you go to the school foundation program, the differences there are the Hathaway program, the $270,000 that we did not add. We added the funding of $15,000 for the summer school for the blind. And then they added they had the reduction on the transportation reimbursement. So those are the difference there. And then on school capital construction, we added the additional four schools, which was the $52 million, and they kept with the revised language that we had from JAC, and with that it tightened up the component spending that they had, kind of like a slush fund, and the difference is about $1 million there. So those are basically the changes to the two budgets.
Questions? Excuse me, one second. Ladies and gentlemen, on that reconciliation sheet, the liquor warehouse money, the budget bill had more money in the auditor's office than Senate File 72 had in it, in general fund dollars. And the Senate just deleted all of the funding in the budget bill, general fund, that defaults to Senate File 72. But they put the money into the budget reserve account, and that's where they took the money out to pay for the liquor warehouse. That's why, but it's essentially a wash. But it profiles differently on the goldenrod because we still have it in our profile and they do not. But essentially it's the 14, 15 million there with the local governments, the DD and judicial and the CapCon, and then the transportation reimbursement, which is that Senate 3009 on page 23 of the Senate amendments, that just holds the transportation dollars to the 09-10 figure. And that figure is then the $6,353,000. That's not in the amendment, but it's profiled on the reconciliation. Chairman Childers.
Well, Mr. Speaker, procedurally, I'm assuming that you'll just assign a committee and go there. You aren't asking us to vote on anything today. Is that right?
Chairman Childers, pursuant to the budget bills rule 14-1G, after all third reading amendments have been considered, no third reading vote will be taken, and the bill shall not be sent back to the House of Origin for concurrence. It's referred to the Appropriations Committee. Back to the Appropriations Committee. So thank you for raising that point. I hadn't quite gotten there. Any other questions? All righty. Let me find the magic words. Ladies and gentlemen, we need to approve the standing committee report that was just presented to you. Madam Chairman Berger, did you move the standing committee report? Would you please, if you didn't?
The third reading?
Yes.
Okay. Okay. I move standing committee report number one to House Bill 1. Senate File 1.
The motion is to approve the Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, Standing Committee Report Number 1 is Senate File 1. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. Senate File 1, Conference Committee on Senate File 1. Chairman Berger, Representative Hammonds, Representative Pedersen, Representative Cohey, and Representative Buchanan. And Senate File 1 is referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriations. The Senate File 1 is going to the Joint Conference Committee with that committee as appointed. And we will do concurrences on Monday. And committee announcements. Chairman Lockhart.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number 9 will meet on Monday morning at 9 o'clock in room H18 to work on interim topics.
Chairman Gingrey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number 1, Judiciary, will meet Monday at 8 a.m. in room H8 to consider interim topics, and then we will meet at noon with our counterparts down the hall to discuss interim topics. Oh, actually, not noon, upon adjournment. I'm sorry.
Chairman Illaway.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number 7, Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions, will meet Monday morning at 8 a.m. in room S-19 to discuss joint interim topics.
Chairman Childers.
Mr. Speaker, your committee number 6, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, Cultural Resources, will meet Monday morning, March 1st at 8 a.m. in room H10 to discuss interim topics.
Chairman Landon.
Mr. Speaker, your committee number 10 will meet Monday at noon with our counterparts from the Senate in room H17 to discuss interim topics.
Chairman Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number 3, Revenue, will meet at 8 a.m. Monday morning with the like committee from the Senate to discuss interim topics. Also remind you that Wednesday morning Bible study will be at 6:30 Monday morning.
Chairman Cohey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number 8, Highways, Transportation, and Military Affairs, will meet Monday, 8 a.m. That's the 1st of March in room H17 to discuss interim topics.
Any other announcements? Mr. Majority Floor Leader, that clears the desk.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move that the House adjourn until Monday, March 1st, 2010, at 10 a.m.
Thank you. Would the Budget Conference Committee meet in my office right after adjournment? You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye. Those opposed, no. The House is you don't want to adjourn? No, the House is adjourned until Monday morning, March 1st, 2010, at 10 a.m.